It's okay. It's okay. He won't hurt us. He would have killed me by now. Okay? I think it's because we're not actually part of the movie. He doesn't really know what to do with us.
Hello and welcome to another movie podcast. My name is Oscar, and with me today are...
Luke?
Yeah, and...
Ralph.
I did point to you, Ralph, first.
Yeah, but I wasn't paying attention.
Clearly. Luke, welcome back. It's been like two shows, three shows?
Something like that.
You're under the weather right now, is that correct?
Yeah, sure.
Sure?
Yes.
No? Okay. Are you feeling okay, though? Are you feeling better? Is it on the tail end, or is it the beginning of it?
Oh, it's the tail end.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
That's good. So, this is episode number 65, and what we typically do on the show is that we review three films, two new or new-ish movies, and we always pick a third review in relation to our marathon, which we normally have going throughout the year. Right now, we're doing a Steven Spielberg marathon, actually. We're, like, just past the middle of it, where we're going in chronological order between the four films that we each chose, and we're on to Schindler's List right now, so it's going to be a happy, merry movie. So that's what we'll be reviewing today, as well as Creed 2, sequel to Creed, which is part of the Rocky franchise, so it's like the eighth movie, I can't even keep track. And then the sequel to the Disney movie, the hit movie, actually, Ralph Breaks the Internet, which is a Wreck-It Ralph sequel. And that's the roster for today. You can always check out our shit over at otherpodcast.com. We can find past shows, bonus episodes, other marathons we've done. This is our third marathon, right? Yes, classics. And we did the animated one, right? Okay. So that's, check that out there. We also, bonus episodes is going to be a great thing. So this is December, so Merry Christmas and whatever, blah, Turkey Day, all that stuff. New month, new bonus. So this bonus episode for this month will be Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Is that the full title? I think so,
yeah.
It's that animated movie that looks really promising. I mean, we're geeks about that kind of thing anyway, so it's right up our alley, but most likely it'll be up yours too. It looks really fun. So the way it works is that if you donate any amount to our show, that bonus episode will be sent to you by the end of the month. If not, you'll have to wait 5 months later. So 5 months ago, we reviewed Sorry to Bother You, which I think came out in July or June or something like that. And we did that for our bonus episode that month. So that's coming out this month for everyone. Check that out. Coming out at otherpodcast.com and any podcaster of your choice. Talked about that. And good. One more thing we do before we start reviewing our first thing here is we talk about recent discoveries, where we each, of course, talk about some of the films we've been watching outside from each other's wheelhouse. And we're going to start with Luke today. And you have a classic movie here.
Yes.
I mean, classic. Is that too strong a word?
Probably.
It's something.
Maybe. Okay. Go ahead. Why don't you?
I saw with? Stephen King's Maximum Overdrive.
Memories.
1986. Sci-fi, horror, dark comedy. There's a special romance, maybe.
Maybe. I don't remember any of it. I just remember Emilia Estevez being in that movie.
Yeah, essentially there's a comet heading by the Earth, and the radiation is causing electrical things to come,
like,
to life.
Come to life, yeah.
Like a turkey cutter, or, you know, your toothbrush that's electric.
Right.
But mainly it's the cars.
Well, they had electric toothbrushes in the 80s? I'm sure they did. I'm just surprised, I guess, a little bit.
It's a pretty hokey movie, but it's still a fun watch.
Yeah.
And the AC/DC does an entire soundtrack for it.
Oh, really?
Fun fact.
I don't remember that at all. You know what that reminds me of, the plot of this movie? It reminds me of, do you guys remember the original Transformers movie, the Michael Bay one, of course, where there's a scene where they keep touching or keep hitting the AllSpark, and yes, it hits like this wave, and all the machines in the area turn into bots?
Yes.
It kind of feels like that.
Right, kind of does.
Okay. So, you were saying, how was it?
It was interesting. It's a complete campy movie, you know? That's what it is.
Oh, they go camping.
It's a campy.
Oh.
Damn, okay. Sure. So, you know, you're not expecting to, for, you know.
All right. But Emilio Estevez, he was a heartthrob.
He was pretty young.
In the 80s, he was like every girl, like, you know, right, what I'm saying?
He was going quack, quack, quack.
I think that was the
90s. That's before Mighty Ducks, bro.
This is like a made-for-TV movie.
Was it made-for-TV?
I believe so.
Most likely. Stephen King did a lot of that. Okay, cool. Maximum, what is it? Overdrive?
Overdrive, yeah.
That's such an exaggerated title. Also, it seems kind of redundant.
It's a truck with a fire all over it, right?
No. Is it? No.
It's got like this, like in the movie.
Black truck?
It looks like a hobgoblin head on it.
I think you're thinking of Black Dog.
Maybe I am.
Think of the Green Goblin from Spider-Man animated.
You know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying.
I know what you're saying. Yeah.
You know what I'm putting there. It's like trying to be dual. Okay, cool. So that's movie. That's that movie. Where is it online somewhere, or did you?
No, I think they like re-released it because me and my buddy saw it at like a Best Buy. It was like a new release, so we picked it up.
Gotcha. What's the other one?
The other one is another classic, 1987's The Gate.
I don't know this one.
It's a horror movie.
Ooh.
Where these like two 12-year-old kids open the gate
to help
in their backyard, and these demons start coming out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is it cheesy as it sounds?
Oh, fuck yeah.
Okay, cool. Can't wait.
Yeah. It's funny, like the main reason I saw it was because there's a band called The Lurking Corpses,
mm-hmm.
and one of the songs they use is a clip from this movie.
Oh, okay.
Where they're like, where's your little brother? Oh, he's probably just fagging off in reference to
this movie.
Yeah. In reference to masturbating. And I'm like, what movie is that? He's like, my buddy's like, oh, it's The Gate. I'm like, oh, let's watch this movie.
So. Nice. You got to see that movie with that clip from the audio from that band that they used.
Exactly.
Right. You have to. That's so specific, Luke.
It is.
Such
right?
a trail you went there. In the grand scheme of trashy or whatever kind of horror movies, where does it fit? Does it on the top scale of these kind of movies or lower? Or
I would say it's middle? Kind of in the lower.
Okay.
It has some cool like little clay animation, like stop animation, like
really?
Yeah, like some creatures that came from the underworld. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it was fun.
Okay.
It's a fun watch, you know.
Is it like hard R or no? If you know what I'm talking about.
No. I don't think it was... there was killing, but there was like no tits or anything.
No. I don't mean that. I mean in the violence. Violence is worse than... Okay. That's what I meant. I'm not going to get into political stuff.
Honestly, I can't remember because back in... What you considered a hard R in the 80s versus us now.
I mean, some of that stuff was worse than today. Yes.
Way worse.
Some of that stuff, yeah, for sure. Of course.
I would say some PG-13 is fucking hard
that,
now.
It didn't seem that bad.
Okay, I was just asking. From my own personal taste. Maybe it's on Shudder, I'll find it there or something. So that's The Gate. Awesome. Yeah. What else you got? You got
and
one more.
The most recent one is Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald.
I have not seen this yet.
I hear Johnny Depp is in this movie.
We all know that.
He really is. Yes.
Was he in the last movie?
Only at the end.
That was the big reveal, right?
That was the reveal of who the inspector
Spoilers.
Was.
Jeez. He's a shit.
Really? Anyway.
So someone said that to me, and I spoiled it to them because they haven't seen the first one.
Oh.
And they were like, I heard Johnny Depp's in this one. I was like, wasn't he in the last one? I didn't see the last one. Oh. That's basically how the conversation went. And I was like, I don't know, maybe he wasn't.
It's hardly even a twist. It was just like, the spoiler was that Johnny Depp is in the movie.
Yeah.
That's not really spoiling anything. Anyway, so how was it, Luke?
It was all right. It's weird because this is going to be like,
you're such
five
a fan too.
Series.
You said yes to a lot of things that you shouldn't say yes
no,
to.
No, this is going to be like a five movie series, right? So this is kind
is
of
that what they said?
Like, I think so.
What?
Yeah.
That's okay. Fucking bonkers.
That's insane.
So this is weird because it's kind of like, it's like the Two Towers, you know? It's not much plot. It's just, here's what happens and this is how it gets to this point.
Is it singularly the dude's perspective, the Fantastic Beast dude?
Him and... Ezra Miller's, he's Credence again. He replaces that role. I didn't think he was going to be in this movie, but
I don't know who any of that is.
He was the guy that had that crazy like demon thing that because he would like.
Oh,
his magic.
I vaguely remember that. Yeah, it's coming back.
So
a little
bit. He's back in there.
Okay.
They're bringing like, they bring in some family. They bring in Dumbledore in this one.
Yeah, Jude Law right plays him.
Yes. And then it gives you like the whole relationship between Jude Law and Grindelwald. I mean, Dumbledore and Grindelwald.
Really? Do they really?
Yes.
Hmm. Okay.
I don't want to spoil it for you because it's kind of cool. So.
Okay. No, I mean, this is going to be an HBO thing. I'll wait for that.
But like, honestly, it's just like, it just takes place. Like, I didn't think there was a real plot to it.
No.
So I'm like, okay, they just go to France.
I mean, they're making this shit up.
Yeah.
This is Game of Thrones season 7. You know, they're making shit up now.
April 2009.
Dude, they no Game of Thrones this year. That's crazy for me.
2019,
it hurts. It hurts.
It hurts a little bit.
I saw commercials. So.
I think they're almost past their expiration date. They should really not waste too much longer. That's a different topic. Sorry.
No lie. Everyone at work has been talking about Game of Thrones.
Really?
Yeah, they're like itching for it.
Oh,
everyone's
really?
Like fiending.
It's almost past.
It needs to come out.
We're past what's they call it for withdrawal symptoms. We're almost past the withdrawal symptoms. Like we're not gonna give a shit anymore. Anyway. So I want to say something to The Crimes of Grindelwald. Doesn't it remind you of the worst Indiana Jones, The Kingdom of the Crystal Skull? Remember our friend Sean, who put it really nicely. I remember this, one of the few things I remember, where he said that the reason that movie sucked is because you're fighting against Soviets and they're clearly second tier to Nazis, which is why they worked way better.
Yeah.
I'm like, so Grindelwald's just a second shittier Voldemort. And why do we care? Right? Yeah. Like Voldemort's clearly the bigger badass, and he's defeated already in the future, you know?
Yeah, I guess the reason we care is this is what sparks Voldemort.
No, it does not. It does not spark Voldemort.
No, this is before Voldemort.
This is before he's even born.
But this is what sparks. But this is the kind of movement that sparks his movement.
Oh, I see what you mean. No. Because these movements have always been around. The Mudblood stuff has always been around.
I get it, but he's the one who pushed the envelope to be like that already. You get what I'm saying?
I don't know about that. Remember when they did the... We're getting pretty geeky here. But when they go into the history of...
That's my understanding of it.
When they go into all the memory stuff that Dumbledore has in the Half-Blood Prince book,
yeah.
They go into Voldemort's ideology came from the fact that his mom and his dad was a muggle and things like that. It was very much more of a personal vendetta racism thing than it was, because Grindelwald did it. No. Yeah. I don't think so. Maybe the society was there, but it's like... I see what you're saying. Like, KKK was always there. They just took this leader to bring it to a higher step.
Yeah. I think that's what I'm thinking of.
But I think that kind of racism and tribulation was there even before. Pure blood thing.
I agree, it was there already. I mean, that's literally Slytherin.
Yeah. Yeah, right, exactly. So, yeah, Salazar probably started it.
Probably.
So, there you go. Got geeky there. Yeah. Sorry.
And there's also a very awesome cameo from the first book in this movie.
From the first book?
Yes.
Oh, the stone, huh? Sorcerer's Stone?
Not the stone, actually.
Okay. That'd be funny if I just nailed it.
The Soccer of Stone?
The Soccer of Stone. It'd be funny if I just nailed it out of the blue. Okay.
And Luke's like, motherfucker.
I'm trying to guess it.
It's the only thing the first book had that the rest didn't, so like, I could think of, you know?
Yeah, I guess.
All right, cool. So that's what Luke's been watching. Raph, what have you been watching? You're into Christmas stuff.
Yeah, of course. It's that time of year, guys. Netflix has a bunch of Christmas shit. They literally have a section called Once Upon a Netflix.
Yes.
Which I love.
Yeah.
So this is a horrible description, so I re-edit it, and I'll say it myself. A young man enters the town of El Camino, Nevada, who seeks out a father who he has never met, and through no fault of his own, ends up barricaded in a liquor store with five other people on Christmas Eve. So the movie's called El Camino Christmas. I didn't want to just name the movie without saying blah, blah, blah. This stars, is directed by David E. Talbert. Starring Dax Shepard, Kurtwood Smith, Luke Grimes, Emilio Rivera, and Vincent D'Onofrio.
I should have said that. D'Onofrio.
D'Onofrio, yeah. And let me think who else. We have Kimberly Quinn, Michelle Millett, and Jessica Alba is the news person.
Okay.
Tim Allen's in it.
I forgot
to mention Tim Allen.
What's your threshold on Christmas movies?
What do you mean?
Like, what's your creme de la creme Christmas movie?
I don't know. I don't know that answer.
Well, I mean, do you watch a lot of them? That's my point.
I've seen a lot. Yeah, sure.
Okay. All right.
But so you don't know how to answer that question. in a usual Raphael, I'm not me without not seeing classics. Like, I've never seen White Christmas.
You've never seen White Christmas? Okay. Have you seen Christmas Story? Right? You've seen that?
Yeah, who has? You can't avoid that movie.
I wish I could.
Like, it's just, it's in your face everywhere.
I really hate that movie.
I've seen Miracle on 34th Street.
That's a good one. It's a Wonderful Life is not a Christmas movie.
I know that.
It's a New Year's movie. I'm kidding, obviously. But, okay. I was just curious, like, how does it stack compared to the ones you loved or liked?
I mean, I like the kid ones. I like a lot of kid ones. The ones I grew up with usually are the case.
Wasn't with Arnold Schwarzenegger? He's buying that gift for his.
It's a horrible movie. You can't watch that again.
You know what I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about.
What's the name of it? Oh fuck! It's called. It's named after the toy.
Yeah, it's named after the toy.
You know what I'm talking about, Luke? Sinbad's in it. I'm pretty sure Sinbad's in it.
This is why it's bad.
Jingle All the Way.
Is it Jingle All the Way?
I saw it.
Turbo Man.
I saw it last year.
What a shitty toy.
It was horrible.
Okay. Is it that one?
No, it's not that one. I like the Home Alone series.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
So those are up there for sure.
All of them?
No. The first two.
Did you guys hear about the original Home Alone movie?
What about it?
The one that's Home Alone's based on? That's a French movie that's much more hardcore and badass.
Ooh, no.
No, I want to see it. It's apparently that not even released yet for American, it's still only French. But really? You can find like a pirated thing.
You can't even find any like English subtitles?
No, there's no subtitles. I mean, there is now, I think. That's why people are talking about it.
Do we have any French friends?
Well, there's been some reviews about it recently, and I think it's because they're re-releasing it. Finally.
Any close French friends?
Any friends of the show that are French, please, by all means, send me a copy. Anyway,
regardless, I saw this movie. It's not your typical Christmas movie. It's just like Christmas adjacent, kind of like Die Hard is. Mm-hmm. Die Hard is also
Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
What I'm saying is that it just takes place in Christmas.
Yeah. You know?
That's what I'm trying to get at.
The House of Yes.
So, regardless, this guy clicks in. It's a freaking shithole of a town. Mm-hmm. Shithole cops. What's it called? Played by Vincent D'Onofrio and Dax Shepard, their brothers. Vincent D'Onofrio basically arrests our main actor.
D'Onofrio
here.
Plays a cop? Oh, shocker.
Yeah, exactly. He arrests our main protagonist, Luke Grimes, who is who's trying to look for his dad, right? He's which is like very obvious, right? And it's very obvious who the dad is when you figure it out, even though they didn't tell you until the very end. But like I said, it's a super obvious paint-by-numbers thing. They arrest him for no reason. The brother lets him go. And then he sees that he's gone. He thinks he escapes. And that's how they end up in the liquor store, because now they're being held up because he's shooting. And Vincent D'Onofrio, like I said, he's a piece of shit cop.
Okay.
Who's like just basically works because he doesn't know.
This is not very hopeful. What else to me?
It's a depressing kind of movie.
Okay.
I think Tim Allen does a good job in the movie. He plays himself.
Timothy Allenson? Yeah, of course.
Yes, Timothy Allenson. And overall, it's about like, I think the movie does a good job of telling you, like, if you do good deeds for the most part, what's it called? Good stuff will happen to you.
Yeah, but no good deed goes unpunished. Also.
Also.
Also. In addition to.
It is funny. It's a little dark. Overall, okay.
Okay.
I don't need to rewatch this movie ever again. And, I won't recommend it to either of you two.
What about a family? Like a family members? Will they have fun watching with like their kids or whatever?
No.
No, okay.
Not with kids, though. No.
But well, how about the next one you got here?
I would say like a single person, Luke, might want to watch it, but I don't think he's interested in those kind of movies. Right.
All right. So what's the next one you got? You have two of them, right? This is one I wanted to see just because of the actor.
I already forgot. What
Kurt Russell one?
Oh, yeah. This is Chronicles, right?
Christmas Chronicles.
So it's a story of sister and brother Kate and Teddy Pius, whose Christmas Eve plan to catch Santa Claus on camera turns into an unexpected journey that most kids can only dream about. Shocking.
Oh, really? Trying to catch him on camera?
Yeah, so they catch him on camera. It's cool. They do this whole plot where, what's it called? Well, hold on real quick. It's starring Kurt Russell, Darby Camp, Judah Lewis, Oliver Hudson, Kimberly Williams Paisley, I think.
Yeah, I know the name.
And then that's about it. That's all that's important. There's some random people in there that are cameos that you see, but not important. Not that important, should I say. It's cool. This one was a way better Christmas movie. I wanted to watch this movie with Leo. Leo didn't want to watch it because it's a little serious in the beginning. It's a serious subject. It starts off with, like, you find out that it's really cool. They do like 10 years worth of video camera footage of Christmas, how they spend Christmas, the whole family.
Oh, okay.
And then the dad, you know that the dad died. You don't know how.
Oh, I see. He's just missing.
And this is the next year. He's missing this next year.
Oh, I see.
And like the son is now into like crime and does bullshit. You know, he's an asshole now. He's a teenager, like 18
rebelling.
Or 16. Rebelling, exactly. He doesn't know how to vent, basically.
Right.
The sister. Or the daughter, the sister. She's super wholesome, you know, and wants everything Santa.
Okay,
so it's a cool story. I like the whole Santa thing. I like the whole. I think Kurt Russell plays a cool Santa. He's also complains that why am I always depicted as fat when I'm not fat? He's like, I work out all the time. You know how many cookies I have to eat a year, like, you know, in one day, shit like that. It's pretty cool.
Okay, yeah,
it's pretty cool. They do a whole like thing with elves and. The elven language.
I think I saw it in the trailer.
It's cool. Something. It's fun. It's definitely if your family.
Would I like it? I think I will.
I think you would like it. It's a fun watch. Okay. There's some stuff that they go super side stuff for no reason. Mm-hmm. A couple stuff is very just hammy. There's a musical. There's a music part in it that just doesn't need to be there, but is there.
Yeah.
Overall message is like, I liked it overall, how it works out. I like how the world works in this Santa, how they kind of made Santa Claus work.
Okay.
Cool. How he goes through the world and traverses. It's pretty cool.
Okay.
I had fun watching it.
So is it more family friendly?
It is way more family friendly.
Cool.
It's a very serious topic, though, and it kind of tells you, like, They could have done a little bit better job of telling you how to grasp that, you know, when you lose somebody.
I mean, so is Inside Out, right?
Right. But I think this movie could have done a better job at that, what I'm saying.
Okay.
Is that they do a good job of touching base on it and knowing that there's an issue that needs to get resolved, but never actually talking about it, and it just kind of gets resolved.
Gotcha. Okay.
So
that's Christmas Chronicles.
Uh-huh.
Cool. That's what I've also been watching. I have two as well, both on Netflix. I've been catching up to some movies that I heard were really good. So I'm kind of whittling it down to not just watch everything Netflix has. So I just choice pick a few. This is one of them. Private Life is the one I saw. Richard and Rachel, a couple in the throes of infertility, try to maintain their marriage as they descend deeper and deeper into the weird world of assisted reproduction and domestic adoption. When their doctor suggests third-party reproduction, they bristle. But when Sadie, a recent college dropout, re-enters their life, they reconsider. And this movie stars Catherine Hahn, which if you've seen her face, you'd be like, oh, yes, she's been in tons of things. Paul Giamatti definitely is in this movie. He's the main dude. And Amy Ross. Where are these other people? Dennis O'Hare, I want to say. Molly Shannon is really good in this movie and does not play like a Molly Shannon role.
Okay.
She plays like a mother, but really good. Kind of like Laurie Metcalf in that one movie from last year. Like a really good mother like that. Kind of, but not quite like that. But yeah. Anyway. John Bird. Yeah, what's the name of that movie? Lady Bird. Thank you. John Carroll Lynch is in this movie, which I love everywhere she's in. He's in, sorry. And Kaylee Carter definitely plays Sadie. And this is written and directed by Tamara Jenkins, who's done a few movies that...
What does her name sound familiar?
She did The Savages, which is probably the biggest movie she's made besides this one. I don't know what else you might think. You might confuse it with a different person.
Okay.
So, this is a comedy drama. It kind of classifies as drama, but I think there's some funny parts for sure. Think of, let me put the best description for you guys, because you guys have both seen Tully, right?
Yes.
It is like Tully if that couple were trying to get a baby. So like it takes that kind of angle, that very very intimate, you know, behind the house doors kind of thing, you know, like the way they argue, the way they come up with a solution or a problem, or the way they think things through. It feels very realistic and coupley, you know, to their sense of mannerisms and whatever. It's really realistic in that way. So it's really good in that way. Except that they're just trying to have a kid. And these two, this couple, they're older, obviously. Paul Giamatti's like 40 something. And they're like, you know, not like super like retired or anything like that. But they're like, they live in, I forget what burb, but in New York. And they're like playwrights and they're like artists and stuff like that. And this niece of theirs comes into their lives and she's like, you know, they're like, oh, you guys are the cool uncle and aunt kind of thing because they're artists. Comes into their life, they ask her the question, you know, if they can use her egg to fertilize the wife. And it turns into, as you can imagine, a really funny series and sometimes very awkward series of events that leads into a lot of cool drama scenes and funny scenes and stuff. And again, super surprisingly realistic. It's pretty funny at points that you didn't think it would be funny. The acting is really, really good. I really recommend this movie.
Private Life?
Yes, on Netflix. One of the good ones that Netflix has this year, for sure. Because most of them suck, actually.
Yeah, there's been a lot of bombs.
A lot of bombs. But then again, they should be better.
They're doing a lot. They put out so much content.
And Buster Scruggs also is on there, so can't really complain too much either.
Right, exactly.
So that's that one. The other one I saw is, let me find it here. It's also another Netflix one. Here it is. And this one, I think, is even better. But I think it's more of my alley, honestly. It's called The Kindergarten Teacher. A kindergarten teacher in New York becomes obsessed with one of her students, whom she believes is a child prodigy. And this stars Maggie Gyllenhaal, primarily her. She's in, I think, every scene. Gael Garcia Bernal is in this movie as well. Atul Blackson Wood, Libya Pug, Michael Chernes, who plays the husband. And the little boy is played by Parker Sivak. Sarah Colangelo? I don't know. Wrote and directed. I don't know who that is. Anyway, this is another Netflix one. Have you seen it, Rob?
No, I haven't seen it.
My parents saw it the other day, and it looked really interesting, so I put it on my list.
Oh, is that right?
And I love Maggie Gyllenhaal. She's pretty great in everything. She's in The Deuce this year. Fucking amazing in The Deuce. Anyway, this is a very strange movie. It's pure drama. There's nothing else to it. It's not what you think, either. It's not a molestation type deal, so don't worry about that kind of thing necessarily. Although every time she gets herself alone with this kid, with this boy, It's amazing how instinctually, culturally speaking, you can immediately think that it could go that way. It never does because she's not interested. She's married with kids and is not interested in anything like that. Mm-hmm. But this boy is amazing at doing poetry. He's 5 years old, 6 years old. He's in kindergarten. And he can do poetry on a level that adults can't even fathom.
Yeah, Leo, what the hell? No, anyways.
Nice.
Good save.
And she starts, like, as you can imagine, it's very awkward. Not very awkward. It's very messed up. Because the primary source of this movie goes between her taking advantage of potentially his poetry and pawning it off as her own. Because she wants to be a good writer, too, and taking poetry classes, like adult poetry classes. And she's been using his work in her classes in the beginning. And then the polar opposite reaction also is that she wants to nurture this prodigy like the next Mozart for poetry kind of thing. And she struggles with that in the entire movie. And a lot of it just done with Maggie Gyllenhaal's face, which is just a great actress.
No, she's struggling with it because she doesn't know how?
Right, doesn't know how. She... It doesn't know what the right path is and tries to see the background of this kid's life and
is this
him.
Is this something also like...
Yeah.
Oh my God, what's that movie with... what's it called? With the drummer?
Whiplash?
Yeah. Is it something in that nature where she doesn't know how to and she's trying, like, he has his own way of pushing people.
No, not like that. Okay. She doesn't even get the chance. It's like she wants to get this boy the chance to get to that point.
Okay.
He's too young to really push anything out of him.
Yeah.
She talks to him a lot and obviously trying to get him to, like, hey, every time you think of something like this, you can call me and I'll write it down for you or whatever, mm-hmm. things like that. And the movie goes into interesting territories because it asks this question, like, how can we, in this day and age, is that even possible? How many prodigies have we missed out on because we want them to just be normal?
Yeah.
And it's a super fascinating. I love this movie so much.
Okay.
And it has a really powerful ending. I did not see the ending coming in that way. And her reaction to that ending is so fucking beautifully haunting. It's so good. So I recommend it for everyone.
Okay.
It is a serious movie, so not for kids or anything like that, but it's a great movie.
Well, it's hard for me to watch.
It's a 90-minute movie, also very short.
Oh, that's good.
Kindergarten Teacher on Netflix. Check that out. That is a big sell for me. So that's where I've been watching, and those are our recent discoveries. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll review our first film of the evening, which is Creed 2.
Creed 2.
Stay with us.
It's time, kid.
Like nothing really matters to him right now, including me.
You gotta think real hard about this. So you got people that need you now.
I'm taking the fight.
Victor Drago, son of Ivan Drago, who infamously killed Apollo Creed, appeared today to issue a challenge to Adonis Creed.
Don't do this.
I ain't got a choice.
That's the same thing your father said, and he died right here in my hands. That kid was raised in hate. It's dangerous. He broke things in me that ain't never been fixed. It ain't worth it.
Under the tutelage of Rocky Balboa, heavyweight contender Adonis Creed faces off against Victor Drago, son of Ivan Drago. You have to say it like that. There's
you
no
don't,
other
you
way.
Actually don't have
you,
to. Don't,
you really do. And yeah. I said tutelage, but it's tutelage.
Yeah.
Tutel.
This is Creed 2, directed by Stephen Caple Jr.
Related to Cable, but not Caple.
Capel. Starring Michael B. Jordan on steroids, Sylvester Stallone, Tessa Thompson, Felicia Rashad, Dolph Lundgren's son. Florian, which is Dolph Lundgren's son in the movie, Victor Drago, Florian Montanu.
Yeah, that's it, really. It was a dude from The Wire. He also is other trainer. Barksdale.
Wood Harris?
Yeah. I just don't miss Barksdale.
Barksdale, wow.
Yeah.
Russell Hornsby plays the promoter. The guy who makes the fight happen.
No, the asshole who starts the fire.
The complete asshole,
right.
Yeah.
He's the cow that kicked that lantern.
Exactly, exactly. So, yeah. Creed 2, we're going to go and since this is Oscar.
We'll start with you.
You weren't doing actual math.
I was. No, because I'm going to have Luke start one of the movies later.
Oh, okay. I see.
His movie.
Mm. Schindler says it's mine, actually.
Is it?
Pretty sure.
I thought it was.
Is it yours?
Pretty sure it's Luke's.
I picked Saving Private Ryan.
It's mine.
You shot the clerk.
I shot the clerk?
Yeah.
Really? I picked that one?
I'm pretty sure. I know
I picked one of them, but I won't.
Regardless. Creed 2, Oscar.
Right, where the hell are my movies?
Go ahead.
None of my movies are out. All right. Creed 2, I love this movie. It's such a... it was a fun movie.
I'm so glad you did.
Hella fun. I didn't expect it to be fun. I really liked the first movie. I was thinking back on the franchise. I haven't seen the Rocky sequels, honestly, in a long time.
I've never seen Rocky Balboa.
Oh, wait. It was your movie.
It is your movie?
Piece of shit.
Piece of fucking shit.
I should never have thought myself.
Don't worry about it, though.
Anyway, and I really liked this movie. I was thinking back on the franchise, and other than the details I may have missed, especially from the... I guess it's a sequel to Rocky 4. Right? Rocky IV is
where he saves,
go to Russia.
Where he stops the Cold War.
Right, stops the Cold War. Yes. Per punch. Every punch stops the Cold War. I don't remember the details of that, but like...
basically, he wins the crowd over.
I remember they're all... The Rocky franchise makes some pretty good movies. I don't think they made real stinkers. Well, maybe one stinks a lot.
The one with Mr. T.
Three?
Yeah.
I like that one.
Do you?
I did.
What about
Have you watched it recently?
It's okay.
I've only seen the Rocky one.
I like the plot of it.
I think Rocky 2.
I like the plot of it. I just feel too out there.
But and maybe I don't remember anything about Rocky V.
What about the Rocky V is the, if I'm correct, that's the one where he trains the guy, no?
I don't remember.
He trains the guy that goes against him.
Sure.
Rocky 2 plus Rocky 5 equals Rocky 7. Adrian's Revenge.
Anyways, is that Simpsons thing?
Yes.
Okay. So, yeah.
Rocky Balboa is pretty good. I was like,
never saw it.
When that one came out, I'm like, oh, come on. Come on, guys. Right? That's like the first big way for me. Of like,
Sylvester Stallone produced them all, right?
And co-wrote every screenplay, I think, too.
I mean,
right.
Yeah. You could have a child write this.
Right. That's right. Especially his dialogue.
Yeah, anyway.
All right. Adrian's Revenge. Rocky Balboa, I saw it. I'm like, that's more exciting than I thought it would be. And you see the, you know, times pass on Rocky's age. And they keep adding to it. When Creed came out, I'm like, oh. And the guy from that Fruitvale station is directing. I'm like, okay, that could be interesting. Much better than I thought it would be. This one is not to that level. I'm not going to say Creed 2 is better than most of them, not even Creed 1. But this is a really entertaining piece of filmmaking, boxing filmmaking. And it's not like it doesn't break any things or records or even art flourishes.
I wonder how much money they got from HBO.
But, right? Yeah, they did.
It's everywhere.
They had the logo there and everything. Yeah. But this movie was fun. It was a fun like revenge sequel thing for my franchise. Who knows what? It was fun, and obviously the actors are, you know, hitting it pretty good. And I was excited by the end. It did the job. I got what I wanted. Yeah, totally. That's my impression.
Cool. I'll go next. I agree with Oscar. I had fun watching the movie. I didn't expect it to. I didn't know what we were gonna do. I didn't know if we were gonna go like how much more do we have to like. Get out of the characters. We got a lot out of Creed already, especially out of Rocky. We always get stuff out of Rocky. He's always growing. He's always learning something new, or you're always getting something new from him, even though he's such an old, established character. You know, it's all about Creed's and how he was learning, right? And what his character development.
Yes.
And in this one, it's a little bit of both still. You mm-hmm. think Rocky would have gotten like through his head through one of the 800 movies about like what his character development is in this movie.
Yeah.
But I like where it moves along with. It feels like a natural step for Adonis's character. Where he just moved, like now he's about to, you know, make his own family and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it makes sense in the step, and he still has that mentality of, you know, like, I can't, like, he's still a kid. He's still young. He's still young in the sport. Even though he's good at it, he's still young in the sport. So I do appreciate how they do character development-wise. We didn't have to get so much out of it, and what we got was essential. That's what I liked about the movie overall.
Yeah.
And I like how it just gets to the fights, gets to the training, gets to whatever needs to happen, and we don't have that much filler. To where I'm just like, I'm getting bogged down by it. We got that establishment that we needed in the first movie. Mm-hmm. And the second movie, this is just for fun. And that's what I got out of it. That's what I liked it.
Okay.
Luke, what do you think of the movie?
I thought it was really good. it kind of cut to the chase. I was like surprised when I looked at my watch. I was like, holy shit, they're in the fight already? I'm like, all right, I like that.
Talking about the main fight or the first one?
This is the first fight.
Okay.
And I was like, but based off that, I was like, oh, he's going to bail hardcore.
Yes, right, exactly.
Well, I was wondering how it was going to happen.
It was predictable right. in that aspect. So.
Right, and also the past Rocky movies have led us to like not immediately assume it's going to go the one way or the other. I mean, a lot of people attempt to forget, but the first Rocky, he loses that fight.
He does.
But it's, but so, it's such an wins. Achievement yeah. that he made it to that far and yeah, got Apollo Creed that low.
Yeah.
But he still lost that battle. But everyone forgets. That's the movie, the franchise, has a lot of peppered of that. That kind of thing. So I was anticipating like nothing. And at the same time, just anticipating something fun.
Right.
I do want to say one thing, though, is that so the movie does take some, there's some limitations for sure. And it tends to be with the writing. Or I should say the way they write Adonis Creed in this movie. You were saying, Ralph, that he is still a young lad, even though he is a champion, brand new champion, though. I mean, it opens with him being the champion.
Exactly.
Getting
yeah.
the thing. And one thing I both hated and also liked is that they use a lot of shorthands to tell the audience what we should be feeling about Adonis Creed. For example, when he wins a title match and he's the champion, they have the announcer say, like, to come out as a contender just a little bit ago and immediately rise to champion is a story to tell. Like, the movie's telling me what I'm supposed to be thinking about. So that way when it goes into why he's too young for some other stuff to wrap around his head.
You know what's...
Uh-huh. You know, like the movie's telling me.
You know what's funny about that is that's how sports are, though. That's how sports narratives are written all the time.
But as a movie,
no, I get it. But it feels natural because that's how any sports announcer talks,
right?
And it felt natural because I watch a lot of fighting. I watch sports in general. That's how they talk. That's literally what they say. They basically write the narrative for you.
Yeah.
So throw it at your
face.
There's
another huge one at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
We'll get to it eventually. And I was like, ugh. I don't need to. I know what's going on.
I do agree.
It was really annoying.
It's like you're getting the spoken version.
Sometimes his character's telling him too, like in the hospital beds or whatever. Yeah, but like otherwise, man, I don't need to literally say word for word. I can understand. And also, Adonis seems kind of a bitch, like a little whiny bitch sometimes. And sometimes it comes across that way.
Yeah.
Other times it comes across like he's just an insecure man and he's feeling when he proposes to his...
I think, also when he when he's bedridden. What's it called? There is this very big insecurity. You know, and it's funny, fighters put everything out there. Fighters put everything, emotions, everything out there. Like, you have nothing to... There's nothing to hide behind.
Yeah.
Right? So, that's you. Everything of you is out there.
Mm-hmm.
100%. So, for them to be like that and then still, like, have to... What's it called? And then come out with either a loss or come out with not a thing that, you know, a result that they wanted
mm-hmm.
is... it's a crazy emotional thing for them, you know?
Yeah.
So... I like the super insecurity that we get from Adonis a lot. I just how he reacts to it is kind of shitty, but it's like the whole young thing still.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I thought it was. I haven't seen the first one. I saw the first one once. Can't say for sure. I do want to revisit it, but like I don't. It feels like I thought he was over that.
I did too.
Right,
I did too.
I guess.
And I just think it's new insecurities that come up.
I mean, Creed 3 better be over it for sure, but like...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go and punch something already, damn it.
Yeah.
I mean...
But yeah. I do like that whole progression where right after the... What's it called? Right after he's in the hospital,
mm-hmm.
that whole, like, how he has to get over that. That was kind of cool for me.
Yeah. So. Should we get into spoilers or say something?
I don't know. Do you want to say anything else before we get into spoilers, Luke?
I think Victor Drago had a better story.
Oh, right. Tell me about that. Yeah, I mean, the movie opens with Victor Drago, actually.
Yeah.
So before the title even...
Besides him looking fucking like he's going to kill somebody.
He's going to kill everything he looks at.
So Victor Drago is the son of Ivan Drago, who has been kind of like divorced, broke, and kicked out of Russia.
Completely shunned from... Yeah.
Completely.
Dude, you don't want to fail in Russia.
Yeah.
And like, you don't.
So can you imagine if you lose at checkers? Yeah. Put you in a timeout room.
So he's in the Ukraine now, training his son to become like the next
I think it's
thing.
Just Ukraine. Don't say the Ukraine.
Huh?
I'm just fucking with you. Talking to my Ukrainian listeners there.
But it's funny because it's like he instills all
this
stuff
Russia
into his
Ukraine
son.
Part or?
terrible.
Like, you know, it's like everything is going to get fixed because of his son. He's going to become the champ or whatever. So he instills so much into his son and pushes him so hard. And then, like, when they start getting all that, you know, fame and recognition again and power and whatever, he's like, I don't want this. This is not what I was, how I was brought up. You know, this is what you want. It's not what I was needed.
Oh, okay. See, I think there you're getting into opinions of what's going on there, because he doesn't say that. And then and I don't think it's very super
when he was
clear.
When he was at the dinner table scene,
yeah,
he
well,
was like,
I think
these people
too,
weren't here
too
for us.
Far. I think we're getting too far into the spoilers part. But I'm just saying, but do you find that interesting? Is my
yes.
Point. Okay. You told me off air you find it more interesting than the main story of Adonis,
yeah.
Right? What made you, is it that?
Yeah, like, it's like, obviously there's like a broken father-son relationship here.
Oh, it's hella broken.
Yeah.
Would you guys say is more broken than the non-relationship Adonis has with Apollo?
Ooh.
That's probably the real thing they're trying to marry here with the duality of these two fighters, right? That's the real thing, is that they're both at the behest of the history of their fathers, right? I mean, one's not there because he's dead, but the other one killed him. So
I just think by the time we get here, yeah. We already had a movie for Creed, and he technically should have got over the fact that for his dad thing, you know, a lot of that was already getting the recognition for his dad. There is still a shadow, right?
Yeah, it probably bugging me more because the first one I thought did that already. Like he already went off the shadow.
Yeah, I think it did. I just think that now you bring in this the Ivan Drago thing, right. And it's just now it's like the specificness of the fight.
A dead body does not care about revenge,
right? Exactly,
you know. So. All right, let's get into spoilers for Creed 2 starting right now.
Why do it again? What do you have to prove?
It's not about that. You wouldn't be any good to anybody if you didn't do what you love. You wouldn't be able to breathe, right? Well, I wouldn't be any good to anybody if I don't handle this the right way. But I need you. I'll beat him.
You better.
So, elaborate more on that dinner scene. What did you think was happening to Victor?
Well, okay, so like, well, for Ivan, it's everything he wanted. His ex-wife is there. He's getting recognized.
Dude, that's a Russian. That's some Russian ex-wife right there.
Super.
She was hella Russian.
And it's crazy, like, they give him, like, these, like, really nice, like, you know, fighting trunks and everything. And he just gets mad at it because he's used to being, like bottom bitch. He works in, like, a construction yard or whatever. He's, like, moving cement, like...
he's doing things, like, the old-fashioned way, right? He's like, working a very hard, like, strenuous job in addition to...
He's not known to, like, the posh...
Train.
And, like, you know...
I don't think the guy knows what even a good meal tastes like. You know what I'm saying? Like, I won't be surprised if he just eats gruel, you know, through a funnel. So you just find it more interesting. But I think, allow me to elaborate or subjectively say something.
No.
Is that, well, I'm doing it. I think you like his story more because it wasn't as fleshed out as Adonis's, which felt a lot of the times, maybe sometimes contrived, why are you bitching? Because it was too much of it. It was more of it, right? I think if we'd gotten the same treatment on Victor Drago, it's not only would the movie be longer, which is already two and change, two something.
Yeah.
But we might feel the same way about Victor in addition to Adonis in some of his points in this movie. Because this movie is not trying to be, you know, an Academy Award winner. It just wants to be an entertainment movie, right? I do agree on some stuff, though, because I did like Victor's story. But, like, also, felt a little unrealistic.
I did like Victor's story as well. I also like the super comparison between when he's – how he starts working out. He's working out with, like, just your everyday stuff around the area, you know, like construction. And he obviously does this his job in construction and a bunch of other things like that. Your typical everyday man, right? Not going to a fancy gym, but when he comes to America, he does go to the fancy gyms. He has all the equipment that Adonis has, and then Adonis switches over to when he fights over.
Which is the movie is subjective. I mean, like subliminally telling the like, if you train this way, you will lose with all the best equipment. Like
it is almost like it is almost
it babies you into a losing.
Yeah, it's saying something different that I think the first Rocky IV, where if we're going to that first
to
one.
The Russia,
yeah. So the Russia one. That's he did the same thing in that one. He trained
in Russia,
in Russia,
but in the cold. Right?
But he trained in the cold. He trained in the. He didn't use. You know, the whole thing was Ivan Drago was like the pinnacle of Russian. What's it called? Technology.
Yeah,
you know you. Tested pH levels, all these crazy, everything was to the peak, you know. And in this one, and he, you know, and Rocky just trained, you know, hard out there in the cold and during the harshness.
So, did you guys buy that Ivan would have been shunned out of his own country that way in the '80s?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you buy that today? The movie's present day.
Maybe.
Because I don't. So, and back then, I understand the Cold War.
Well, I think he's already been shunned out. So.
No, he was already been shunned out for years, right? Cold War, and he's using his son as a clear statement to get back on top again.
Yeah.
Right? To come back in good graces, to family honor, whatever you want to call it. But really, he just wants, you know, money or something. But he wants everything. It's not a bad thing. It's a fatherly thing. I get it. Legacy. But I find it much more unbelievable that after all this time, the country wouldn't take him back now or ever since. I mean, now that the Cold War is dead and gone, it should have been okay by now. Definitely from not. It shouldn't have taken 3 decades for another chance. It should have been able to come back already.
I just think it's a non-starter. It is a non-starter.
But to put it on the sun, like it feels like Victor Drago is either a poor victim, or Victor Drago is stupid. You know, because he's a poor victim because he's been brainwashed to think that that's what his life would be if he lost or didn't compete, right? That he would be just as shunned out as his father, which is unrealistic today.
But is it unrealistic to us? Well, I don't know what's going on in Russia.
No, I don't. But to say that that's what's happening there and that's what happens there is.
But they're not there. That's
dramatized.
I think it is dramatized. But I'm saying
humans are everywhere.
But they're not there.
Yeah,
they're not there the whole time. Yeah. And then it's like, oh yeah, this guy's. Oh yeah, we remember Ivan. Oh yeah, this is his son. That's basically what it comes down to.
So they won't serve him a beer because he's like Ivan's son.
No, I think it's just you know they don't. He at this point he's just Russian by descent. He's not even from Russia because he's never lived in Russia. It's like I'm Mexican from descent. I'm technically never lived in Mexico.
Right.
You know.
I guess.
Right. Like it's kind of similar.
It seems weird.
I'm not saying it doesn't feel weird. I'm not saying it does. I do agree. It does feel weird.
Yeah.
But I'm also saying it's like.
I mean, I don't know. For American audience, I can't see. It just felt very stupid some of that stuff. Like it felt too cartoony bad.
I 100% agree with you.
Yeah.
It does feel that way. Yeah. But at the same time, I can't say that's not how they would take it or not. Because I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how they would.
Cold War days, I get it.
In the Cold War days, even in the Cold War days, it feels comical.
Yeah.
But that's typical Russian thing. You let it go.
Right.
Like, that is something super
Russian.
When
the movie was made back then, there was a lot more allusions to that kind of.
There is.
That you can get away with. You can't get away with that thing anymore. Which is why I found it interesting that the movie pushed it so hard.
Yeah.
You know? But I guess it's whatever. It's ultimately fine. These are mainly...
What you're saying is that it still felt comical. It still felt unrealistic.
It took me out.
And I do agree with you. It did feel that way.
Because I really like Victor. Like, because Victor, his eye is set a lot. You know, he's not just a brick wall.
The dead stare?
The dead stare set a lot. He's in that ring and like the first time versus the second time. So the first time he's in that ring, he is the manipulated, you know, brick wall fighter, right? Well, not manipulated, but the one that is doing his father's legacy, right? The second one, he is thinking. He has been in this country for a while, a little bit now. He understands the challenge, and he, you know, he sees the threat. He sees different things. He's staring differently, you know? I like this arc overall, yeah. I wish I got more too, Luke. But I don't know how much more I would have gotten. But yeah, I liked it. And that fight was a cool ramp up, man. I really liked that
fight. Which
fight? The last fight.
The last fight?
Yeah. I really liked it. And the first one, I knew it was going to go bad for him. I didn't know how bad. I didn't know he was still going to be
champ. I watched it with a friend of the show, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
Is he
a friend of the show?
Yeah, he is.
Okay, good.
And I was like, I was coming up, all right, he's going to lose, right? He's going to lose by this knockout. He's going to come back.
And we're like, oh no, he's going to do this, right? And we're like, as I'm watching it, I was like, oh, okay, look how they went there.
Yeah,
and it was still something surprising because I was like, you know, I'm trying to guess. I was like, we obviously know he's going to lose because right. And the look of fear he has when he's like, this motherfucker punches like a freight train, you know?
I mean, wouldn't it have been awesome if they thought of this before? If they mimicked Rocky, the first movie, and used Victor as Rocky figure, the underground, and the champion underestimates him. And then he comes out, not on top, but comes out putting out such a great fight that even though he loses in the technicality, he still wins, like, the day.
Yeah.
That would have been cool if they did that reverse symmetry.
In the first fight?
Yeah, in the first fight.
That would have been interesting.
That would have been bad. Yeah. I think that would have been badass, personally. Right. Like, barely show him at all and then introduce the history of the guy.
Yeah, well, what I like also is that I think it was a kind of a missed opportunity. They kind of did it, but they kind of didn't. Mm. Is that in the first, and I say first as in Rocky IV when Rocky goes to right. Russia.
I think that's the title of it, Rocky Goes to Russia.
I mean, it might as well be fucking called Rocky Goes to Russia.
It's the police academy. Mission in Moscow.
It does. Yeah. Jesus. He wins the crowd over in Russia.
Yes.
His tenacity, his everything about him wins over the crowd, right? This is a missed opportunity for Victor to win the crowd in Russia. For Victor and Adonis. Like now the fight itself wins the crowd, as in like, wow, this turned out to be a really good fight. Because we thought that freaking Creed was gonna get his ass whooped and everyone was gonna be like, yay, Russia, right?
Yeah.
That's about it. That was the end of the fight. But it turned out to be like, oh wow, this is a slugfest. What's going on? Crowd dies down, you know, okay, but interesting, still not. And then the fight itself brings the crowd. It's almost like both of them were. But it could have been, you could have used it for like the fact that the guy still put up, they both put up a good fight.
Yeah.
It's almost like Adonis won the crowd, but they don't allude to that like they did in the first Rocky.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I thought they could have done something there, but they didn't want to, they didn't want to further develop our Victor character.
No, I mean, ultimately, like I said, they did what they wanted to do.
Did you see the white flag coming in, the towel?
Yeah.
Oh no! I thought he was. I thought he was gonna say something to him, not like one last encouraging thing, but like, you know, it's okay to fail, at that moment, I guess. And I guess the way he does greet him after the match was positive in that angle.
Yeah.
And they were both running together, super as opposed positive, to him on the car.
Exactly.
That's a cool ending for them.
Yeah.
I don't know where it's gonna go. I low key want them back though. Want them back like as a good like. Like adversarial friends.
It would be,
That would be really badass if the Creed 3, if they make one, which I'm sure they will, does that. That would be badass.
So let's talk about something that we haven't talked about at all in the movie. And I know it's been a pretty long review.
Icarus?
The fact that, the baby. He's got a baby.
Yeah. The family thing is a good thing. Mm-hmm. I like that a lot because, you know, it does mirror the very... I mean, you never think that Adonis is going to die, but you... The movie puts you in that mentality right away because Apollo just had a kid too.
Yeah, well, it's not about like what he's going to die or something. It's like he could come out paralyzed.
I mean, these steps are symmetric. Like history repeats itself. You feel that. And I think you're getting a lot of the responsibilities locked into this guy who was much more unsure and insecure.
Well, I like that he's super insecure because he just lost that fight, right?
Yeah.
Because he has a fight before she gets knocked up, right? Before they have the baby?
Yeah, before they have the baby, for sure.
So before they have... Yeah.
She was pregnant, I think, already.
She was pregnant already, yeah. So she has a fight.
Was she?
Yeah, because he goes to tell her that she's going to take the fight. And she's like, oh, you're pregnant.
Yeah.
All the salt and all this thing. And that was a cool scene. And she spits her wine back in the glass.
Right.
Yeah, that was a cool
scene. Hey, that wasn't cheap wine. What the hell?
It don't matter. Anyways, so after he loses... Uh-huh. And comes back, and then he has a kid, and he doesn't know what to do because he's trying to.
Right.
He doesn't even go to the gym. He backs away from going to the gym to do a fight and everything. There's that one scene, you know, because we found out the kid has the same problem as Tessa Thompson in the movie, where she's deaf, basically, or could go deaf.
Yes.
Or is deaf, technically, and you need the hearing aids too.
Right.
And Rocky has a really cool scene there where she's like, he's like, you know, I know you. Like you're gonna love her, and he kind of like pushes him in this scene, like where he tells her, like, well, does it make a difference if she had it or not?
Yeah.
So what do you feel sorry for her? She can't feel sorry for herself. Why do you feel sorry for her?
Right.
And it's a cool scene, and it's just like
But that's true.
And that's Rocky's simplistic wisdom, right there.
That is. It's a simple thing. But he brings up a good point, as in like, and that's something interesting that that you know almost anybody can go through if you think about it, parent wise.
Yeah.
Well, parent wise is like you think about it, where it's you don't know if your kid's gonna come out with something. Doesn't make you mean you're gonna love them any less, or you know.
Yeah.
And that's he brings it up to him perfect, and I think I thought the way he brought it up to him, and he tells him,
"Oh yeah, dude, like, you just got to deal with it." Stallone is working out for me.
So far, it has been.
Even in Rocky Balboa,
I gotta watch that.
It's good.
It's good. Is it the same actor? His son? Rocky Balboa?
Oh, Milo whatever from Gilmore Girls. I think so.
Is it? That's cool.
I think so. I'm not 100%.
I know it was the same one in Adonis because he sees him right in Creed.
I don't remember.
I'm pretty sure it was. I think they tried to keep the consistency.
I might be wrong then. In that case,
all I know is the next set of sequels are going to be pretty awesome.
Why?
With a female deaf boxer.
Oh,
think about it.
Well, Sylvester ain't fucking no one, so I guess there's gonna be a Creed legacy,
right?
Creed legacy.
They do some cool things also, Creed-y. Where he gets hit so hard he loses his hearing, mm-hmm. and he's like, but he can still communicate with like he already communicates with Tessa like that, you know. And there's interesting things.
Did you take a shit? That was the best one.
That's a cool one. Yeah.
Oh,
at the beginning.
At the beginning, yes. Yeah. What do you think of the her music stuff? Like, I like how they put, because she's almost the background wife of any movie, but she barely squeaks by not being so backgroundy because she has her own thing. I wish we got more of her life. Like, for example, like when they're in the hospital with the baby. I mean, where's her friends? Where's her best friend? I kind of wanted that.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like she's just there for his stuff.
Yeah.
She has fans, producers, managers. She's getting big time. She has an album. She's going to, you know, like all this stuff. It feels like all that for a woman who's got all that stuff should definitely have like a best friend or two.
Well, then they have that scene also where she even says it. Like, I feel like I'm putting myself
right
in the back burner.
Right, and the movie kind of does it, but also barely squeezed by. I mean, they do put her music for all his intros when he walks on.
That was a cool live one.
I like that one. Yeah. I like that one. I even liked a little concert thing when the manager dude, the asshole guy, talks to him. I like that stuff pretty fine. What do you think of Sylvester Stallone's little side plot about him talking to his son?
I liked it.
Yeah.
I thought it was something that's you think with all this wisdom he gives out, he
fucking do something.
He fucking do something.
That's how it is. Yeah, that's how.
And
how
I like that it was just it was like something that they've been waiting for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like I've been waiting for you to come to us because. Yeah. Like, you know, it's obviously hard on both of them for the loss of the mother. Since then, cause
is that what the separation was about?
I think it's a mix of both. It's like, you know, I wanted my son to be something. He never wanted to be the life of, you know, whatever.
Okay.
He never wanted to do anything with me because Rocky's not the smartest person. Let's be realistic.
Yeah.
That's even said in the whole movies where he's just like, I'm not the smartest person.
No, he's not.
You know, and I've done horrible mistakes. That's where I am. Where I am right now.
He wasn't like a good actor. Most commercials.
Huh?
Rocky 2, the commercials in Rocky 2. Right. Yeah. So bad.
Yeah.
I liked it too. It was really nice. I think the next one, they're probably going to kill off the character. Probably. He's probably done his damage, Rocky.
Who, Rocky? Yeah. I mean, I could see them killing off the character.
Yeah, at the right moment. But good fight scenes. It was good. It was a good ramp up. The music cue was perfect.
Yeah,
was
for
good,
sure.
Good time for it. I liked it. So that's our. Anything else? Sorry.
No.
Yeah. So that's Creed 2. It's in theaters right now. It apparently is making some good money. So there you go. So there will be a third, most likely. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll review another movie that's in theaters, Ralph Breaks the Internet. Check what that's about and stay with us.
Sweet mother of monkey milk.
Whoa. Kid, I don't think we're in lit wax anymore.
We most certainly are not, friend.
Stuff.
Whoa. This is the most beautiful miracle I've ever seen. But it's so big. It goes on forever and ever. How are we possibly gonna find eBay out there, Ralph?
Hey, kid, don't worry. I'm sure there's someone out here could give us directions. Oh, look at that little egg guy. He's got on one of those hats that smart people wear. I bet he could help us. Come on.
6 years after the events of Wreck-It Ralph,
Ralph and Vanellope, now friends, discover a Wi-Fi router in their arcade, leading them into a new adventure. This is a horrible description, but it's the best one because the rest
What
suck.
Did you want out of the description? The I synopsis?
Don't I don't know.
You just wanted more.
More but less.
Okay, I hear you.
This is Wreck-It Ralph, or Ralph Breaks the Internet, Wreck-It Ralph 2.
That's a terrible title.
I know. Whatever. Okay. They make fun of it, too. Directed by Phil Johnston and Rich Moore, which were in my theater complaining. John C. Reilly starring, Sarah Silverman, Gal Gadot, Taraji P. Henson.
Oh, nice.
Jack McBrayer, Jane Lynch, Alan Tudyk, Alfred Molina.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ed O'Neill, which I didn't think about it was until I found out it was Ed O'Neill.
Who's Ed O'Neill?
Mr. Litwack.
Mr. Who?
Don't worry about it.
Okay.
And
oh, okay.
A bunch of other people. Cool. I guess I'll... No, Luke will start. Go ahead, Luke.
All right.
Wreck-It Ralph 2.
Wreck-It Ralph 2. I really liked it.
Did you? What did you really like about this movie?
I liked all the shiny things and all the things they put into it, like the businesses and whatnot. And the whole time I'm thinking, I'm like, how much did Google pay to have that big building in this internet? That's all. And I'm like,
I was asking that about everything.
Right.
Yeah.
But I like it. It was
the other way around, though.
A fun story.
The studio paid.
It was weird because there was no villain in it.
I see.
I liked it.
Yeah, but it was still a fun one. So I guess like your main thing is don't buy really expensive stuff on eBay.
That is a takeaway I got from it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Don't overbid so much.
Also, you know, don't be a whiny little bitch. Kind of, a little bit. You know, things like that.
I'm glad eBay's still a thing.
Yeah.
Oscar?
eBay said they hello.
No, it is, but I'm saying, like, I think like 6 years ago, eBay was like dying.
Was it?
I think so.
I mean, it has been a while since I bought something through eBay. I'll say that for sure.
I bought something earlier this year. So.
But other than that, I still hear people getting stuff from there. You just can't sell your soul, which is a piece of paper or something. Right? That thing is...
You can sell Bart's soul.
And Lisa's soul. And Mom's soul.
Yeah.
Okay. So I thought this movie was pretty, you know, pretty good. Pretty standard goodness. Animated stuff. I mean, the main thing that I took away from it that's the most throwable at the same time is the references and the innuendos to things and the little quips and jokes. I really like them. Almost on the same level as the Lego Batman movie, except that one was a lot more clever.
Still haven't seen it.
Fix that problem immediately. And anyway.
And I own it.
You own it?
Yeah.
You fucking make me cry. Anyway, yes, I liked it. It was an entertaining movie for kids. Great. The message of the movie, because a lot of these, you know, have to have them or it's part of the thing, the veneer. So the message itself was interesting. Almost, I think, might be one of a kind of strange way to give this message out about friendship and stuff that I really liked. I thought that was pretty cool. I like the, you know, the world they build around the internet's existence. That was cool, too. Yeah, I liked it. I liked the world a lot. I liked that princess scene. Everyone loves her.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good scene.
Classic.
So, yeah. That was my thoughts.
Yeah, I'll agree with you. It wasn't super... It was good. It was a good movie.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the message of the movie. I think a close friend of mine could learn from this movie.
Don't buy stuff on the internet?
No. The message of the movie.
The friendship message.
The friendship message. Other than that, I really enjoyed it. That's something that's just very true. You know? So that was really cool. I did like how the internet is portrayed, especially with all the spams and all the pop-ups. Yes. The pop-ups and everything.
Especially
that was really cool.
Yes.
I like... Obviously, like Oscar said, you said how Google. I wonder how much Google. No. How much did they pay Google to make sure they had everything?
Right. Yes.
You're paying licensing fees, yeah. So I'm pretty sure it was just some ads on their webpage or something. That being said, I really did dig how that worked out. I still love the charm of it, where they go into something and everything changes to the settings of how that thing is displayed. Mm-hmm. So when they go into that racing game. They're in that racing world, you know.
Yes.
They go into what's it called?
like the Disney princess stuff,
the tavern place. They're in the tavern.
Yeah,
you know, all that stuff. That's really cool, and I really did enjoy that.
Yeah, you're talking about the graphics, kind of the card
the graphics, yeah, exactly.
Based on the game,
yeah, kind of thing. I really do enjoy that. They do a really good job about that.
Yeah,
what's it called? Yeah, there's a lot of little innuendos that you can totally miss because they're just kind of said, and it works out though. It's funny how I didn't think about it too much in the first movie, but in this movie, I just still can't see Vanellope as a little girl because of Sarah Silverman's voice.
Because she's so adulty.
Right. So adulty, yeah. So
her stand-up is really adult.
But it still works out. It's just that's such a unique voice.
Yeah, it is. It is.
So, yeah, I had fun, though, and my kid had fun, too. He remembers the Disney princesses more than anything, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I mean, it's this movie has... Okay, it's like the power of this movie are the things that makes this movie also has a big expiration date. Like,
yeah.
Like even the message of this friendship thing, it's very millennial. It's so like new agey stuff that like it can't last beyond a generation. You know, like the essentials of it, and also every reference is based on when you were born in your life.
Well, what's funny is that
princesses weren't so popular,
right? Well, what's funny is that the message for me was something of a I know that already,
right?
For me.
Right.
For people, I guess, for the kids nowadays,
yeah.
That is something important, right, I would say.
Yeah.
But I do agree that for me, like, I was just like, yeah, okay, I get it. I think that's something obvious for me that should already be doing, but I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, and, yeah, I mean, it's definitely, it's like a, you know, I'm trying to think of that other movie I saw this year that I thought was just mainly for kids, and it was probably worse off than this movie. But this movie, it's just, I think it's more dependent on its references to real world stuff than we give it credit for. And it's, I mean, not in a good way. I mean, in a way that it can't survive without those references. Like, this movie will not be good if it was Toogle instead of Google, if it was...
I 100%
agree with you. They did have that YouTube knockoff, but they played that really well.
Yes, they did.
So...
Because it's buried underneath all the reality.
Exactly. Real and they do mention YouTube, you know.
Like if there wasn't stormtroopers walking in the background guarding the Disney castle,
it was
this movie. I'm telling you, that's what this movie lives on, only the references, which is like a frosting.
Yeah,
which means the cake itself is not that good.
And I like how they really only visited like 8 sites tops, I think.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they didn't, you know, no porn. I'm like, come on, come on. Where's the porn?
I you know what? I low-key expected like a XXX
right,
sign
somewhere.
When they were in the black market area. Or something like getting that virus. Oh, wait, am I spoiling too much? Getting the virus?
Mm. Well, now you did.
I mean, yeah. I was around halfway through saying it.
Yeah, you were.
I'm sorry. They get something. Anyway, so yeah, I mean, whatever. It's, yeah, like I expected something like that, but they didn't even reference a little bit of it. So that's fine, whatever. But porn, without porn, there's no internet the way it is.
Yeah, the internet's
in a way.
For porn.
In a way. I unfortunately I don't have a whole lot of this movie. I thought the let's talk about the setups, maybe the scenes and stuff, the action scenes, not action, but the scenes where stuff happens. I thought they were pretty okay. I like the raising stuff. Not so much in the beginning, but it gets better as it go along, especially in that weird twisted metal world they're in, which is what twisted metal with Borderlands with like it's a combo, right, of all these things.
Feels like an MMO.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah, I like that stuff a lot. It was pretty fun, but also, like, what do you guys think about the idea of giving intelligence to digital design? This movie.
Whoa, we just got into some deep shit here.
That's very deep, but I like it.
I mean, zeros and ones have a
no. I like it because Everything's powered by AI, according to Watson.
Watson?
According to the IBM cloud and everything.
Oh.
It is powered. Everything. I mean, it makes sense that's it is almost like it does feel like that. If you think about it, it does feel like there's a program or one little thing that controls this aspect of it. And it goes down to that route. I love the eBay notification messenger boy.
Oh,
my
dude.
favorite
really
thing.
Cool. Yeah. He's like, really like, thanks, messenger boy. You're welcome.
Yeah.
And it's very, very serviceable.
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, we just want to get into that deep question. That'd be fun. I mean, this movie, if that's true, then can we not have any fun? Like, it's like Westworld, right? Westworld has the same question, right? Except that's much more deeper and more adulty, of course. But, like, can we rape and murder all these things we create for that entertainment? But if they are sentient, should we stop? You know, like.
Did you like that the only things that were sentient were the actual computers, but the people, the users themselves, were just an avatar showing up everywhere?
Right. Also, the way that they can move fluidly in the digital world because they're not in digital.
They're not digital.
Right. That was fun because everyone else can move like that. Everyone else can zip by and do curves the way that those avatars cannot.
They're moving like if we're in their, they're in their world.
Right.
And we're
right.
just visitors being rushed around in these lines.
I've always liked, I like the idea of the zero. You know, we're talking about very briefly, Luke, off air about Soma. That's a very tangible element a little bit here or there where ones and zeros can zeros and ones can encapsulate a soul, much less a memory, much less a, you know, all this stuff. And it's very interesting to think about. But this movie has no interest in going into that. Obviously, it just poses it like that, like nothing, and then
no, of course not.
Moves on. Should we get into spoilers for the movie? Do you guys want to talk about
that? I think we can.
Yeah. Okay. Spoilers for Ralph.
Breaks the Internet. That Ralph 2.
Thank. Wow. Starting now.
The Ralphity.
Ralphinator.
Come on. Oh, hello, sir. Interesting. You don't seem to have a search history. Well, let's start one for you. What can Nosemore help you find today? Umbrella. Umbridge. Umami.
No.
Noah's Ark. No doubt. Nordstrom Rack. Ergonomics. Urban Outfitters. Cool.
Looks like no one put Humpty Dumpty together again. This guy's a little soft-boiled.
I'm pretty sure he's just trying to guess what you're gonna say.
Yes, I'm sorry, but my autofill is a touch aggressive today.
Let me try. eBay Sugar Rush steering wheel.
Oh, I only found one result for your query. Isn't that interesting?
What? How did you...
Ah, the internet's very intuitive. Thank you, Mr. Nosemore.
Well, you're welcome.
Ralph, I'm a try.
Oh my God, can you just shut up? All right. So, princess scene.
Which one? Because the first one worked, the second one didn't for me.
Really?
way to rag on Brave. Jeez. She was made by the other studio.
right, and they couldn't understand her with a deep.
I couldn't even understand. I'm like, what?
That was funny. That was a funny thing, and it works for me because they all every princess, you know, has their own little scene, even though that was like in the trailer or it was like a teaser or something like that.
It felt like an extension of that.
It
from
did.
The trailer,
and it felt
like
it still worked out. It was cool. I liked it, the first scene, but the second scene when they're saving Ralph didn't work out. I felt like they forced everyone to use their skills. Like, yes. Did we need her to have
I liked
that
them when
poison
they,
apple?
I was happily
burned this at a specific time. Like, that made no
time
sense.
Time delay.
Thing. Like, how did you time that? Right. Like, it was just. That just felt too much. Like
it would have been cool to see like a Belle reading like a crook manual or something, and like gotta right. do this scheme. Anyway, I was surprised in a good way that they appeared at the end to save Ralph. But you're right, the mechanics of it was so fucking overdone. Oh my god,
it was far fetched.
It was hella far. It was a Pokemon.
Right,
far fetched. Yeah. Yes, it was too much. For sure, and exaggerated. I like that. You know,
it just felt forced.
I like how Ralph was the villain itself, and the title of it makes more sense. And also, you don't expect it because you don't think of the title "Ralph Breaks the Internet." You think that's a misnomer or like a representation or symbolism. Like Ralph is going to enter the internet, not like he's literally going to break it. He literally breaks the internet.
Yeah, he does.
Which also says so many ramifications for the world.
I love those videos.
Oh my god, it says so many more sci-fi things than I thought possible.
I love those videos that he makes.
Yes.
Because I'm going to make them all.
They were really funny.
The
Bob Ross one's hilarious. I love this. That supports a lot of YouTube culture that is also going to quickly change. Because the stuff that we like today is going to be completely changed in 3 years or something.
It can be.
And it won't even look like this anymore. People will be like, what's a Vine? Or that's how Vines were made.
It's actually coming back.
Or whatever the fuck. You know what I'm saying? That's how Vines were back then, you know, compared to now. And it's ridiculous. Because it's like this culture thing that changes every minute. I like that stuff too. I like how he was the villain of his own thing. That was cool. He's needy ass. What did you think of the message?
There was a message?
The neediness, yeah.
Oh.
I mean, basically, friendships can grow apart.
Right.
People can do their own things. You don't ever have to stick together with each other for everything.
Hint, hint, Luke.
Hint,
I'm kidding.
Okay. Okay. You know, people, you can still have a friendship. You can still, you know, you can still. By being apart, growing apart, still grow together, be friends.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's just because you go your own path doesn't mean you have, you know, you have to be with them.
Laid it on thick, too. He was annoying me from before they reached the internet.
Right.
Ralph was really annoying
me. Well, they did a good job of laying that, you know, that down,
Which, what I'm saying is, a friend of ours should take the hint.
Yeah.
Wait, who?
Yeah.
Okay. the silence.
This is so personal. No one's going to understand. It's not good podcasting at all.
It's the best.
All right. So I like that. Like I said, it's very, you know, it's not like genuine, but I don't think I've seen this in a kids movie before, this particular kind of thing.
No.
And but it's also something that's so obvious. And again, so I feel like not only in the modern only that the movie is going to date itself very soon and probably my own lifetime as well. So, yeah. I thought it was okay. Like
You had a long lifetime.
Settle down. Old. Settle down. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I got nothing else in this movie, unfortunately. Yeah,
it was fun.
Yeah.
I kind of want to rewatch it just to like, see all the stuff I missed. Like, what other like?
I think I told myself that when I saw the first movie, and I still haven't rewatched it.
Really?
So I probably will not rewatch this one either.
Yeah.
Honestly. Because I remember.
I'm sure I'll just buy it
the
for
references
my niece.
And the. I like the Zangief thing, the Zangief hair.
That's hilarious.
That was funny.
They do make some really interesting things.
Yeah.
Comments.
But I mean, if you're together for 6 years, you're going to run out of stuff to talk about.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right, so that's our review of Ralph Breaks the Internet. It looks like we recommend it.
Wreck-It Ralph 2.
He finished the title for you.
I don't want to say that part.
Yeah.
Right,
I never
that's
will.
Like he finished it for
it's
you.
It's like saying the Twilight Saga, whatever the fuck. Okay.
Breaking Dawn Part 2.
Yeah, that one. Jesus.
He's got you. What about the Mockingjay War? Which one is that?
I don't know. Tell me.
Oh, the Hunger Games, Mockingjay Part 1, Part 2.
Damn. You shouldn't be part of this.
Luke's got it in the bag.
He shouldn't be part of this. It's not a good thing to be part
of. I agree. He knows the dumbest things about this stuff.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, though, we will review our last film of the evening, which is part of our marathon, and a very serious fucking movie called... Actually, it's a comedy. Schindler's List. Stay with us.
And Wolf. How many? 600. Do the same thing I'm doing. You might even make money at it.
I don't know.
Come on, Julius. I know about the extra food and clothes. You give them paid for out of your own pocket. If we make a combined approach, we could get more than 4,000 out, mine and yours.
Ask.
We could relocate them in something like safety in Moravia.
I don't know.
How many cigarettes have you smoked tonight?
Too many.
For everyone you smoke, I smoke half.
I've done all I can.
I will not accept that.
No, Oscar, I can't do it anymore.
I will not accept that.
No.
How many? 850, give or take.
Give or take what, Stern? Give or take what? Count them. How many?
The true story of Czech-born Oskar Schindler, a businessman who tried to make his fortune during the Second World War by exploiting cheap Jewish labor, but ended up penniless, having saved over 1,000 Polish Jews from almost certain death from the Holocaust, during the Holocaust. This is Schindler's List, and if you heard that description, you know that the entire movie's in that. Also, based on history, based on a 30-year-old movie, or 20-something. This movie, not written by, but is it written by? No, written by, it's based on a book. Steven Zaillian wrote the screenplay. Thomas Keneally wrote the book. Directed by Steven Spielberg, of course, and his production company, Amblin and all that. Jazz is purely his movie. And starring Liam Neeson, Ralph Fiennes, Ben Kingsley, and really the rest are a lot of lesser known, but a lot of them have become bigger known since then, since this movie, because this movie is very... Just call it authentic. It kind of hides a lot of people, right? So Carolyn Goodall, Jonathan Segal, Embeth Davids, who I know and stuff, and a bunch of people. A lot of people are in this movie. It's every extra is accounted for, kind of thing. This is before digital stuff, right? So like everyone's in this movie. Every person you see is a person. Is what I'm trying to say. Very practical effects and stuff. Big Oscar win too. Won like.
7 out of 12, I believe.
7, yes. Including picture, directing, all that jazz. So, yeah. Big movie, guys. Big movie. Everyone who's everyone kind of knows this movie. Even a passing person who knows about movies, right? Has heard of this movie or seen it. It's shown in classrooms, too. I think that might have been where I first saw it. In high school, maybe. Or grade school. Not grade school, but high school, I think. I seem to recall watching it then. This is my third rewatch. My last one being a long time ago. So, without further ado, Ralph, what did you think of Schindler's List?
Saw that one coming. I don't know how many times for me, but
spoiler filled, by the way. Did I say that already?
All the spoilers.
Yes.
I think, no, I don't know if we did, but
we're not
regardless.
Separate them.
Yeah, we're not going to. What did I think about Schindler's List?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to like a movie like
feel
this.
Feel good movie? It's a feel good movie.
Right, exactly. Well, pick. Close the door. Thank you. Well, like I said, it's hard to say, you know, I like the movie. It's a good movie, you know, like,
yeah,
with the topic at hand. But it is a good movie. It's a good depiction of said stuff. Oh, I know what he's doing. It's a good depiction of like the slice of, you know, what happened for, what's the guy's?
Schindler.
Oscar Schindler. You think I'd know the name, right?
Right.
Right. With a K, though.
Yeah, I know. What I like about the movie is, I guess, the progression of Oscar Schindler. And the progression and the relation that he has with Ishtar Stern, which is Ben Kingsley's character.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I think without that character, you don't get anything. There's no development for Oscar Schindler, or at least not to the level that we get, right? I think in the end he's always had it in him, because you can't just, you know, convince somebody completely to change their ways,
mm-hmm.
Without them wanting to begin with, or without them having to do that. That's a big thing in the movie, and it doesn't really take place until like 2 hours in, to be honest with you. It takes like the first, now 2 hours in, when he's doing it like on his own completely, and he's... Now he's doing everything without having to be pushed or anything, right?
Right.
At this point, he's almost being held back 2 hours into the movie. So this time around, I'm seeing more of the character development than I was, I guess, the first time around, or the first couple times around, where I'm just watching the story
mm-hmm.
take place in itself. And it's more of the fact that of like all this shit that's going on, and all the brutalities and all the, you know, that happens around... That it still happens, obviously, in the movie. It's not that it didn't. I guess this time around, I just happened to focus more on the relations that they have, along with the relations that Oscar has with, what's it called? Who was that guy? With Goth.
Oh, God. Yeah, Ralph Fiennes the character.
Ralph Fiennes' character, who is a very weird man. A very, what's it called? He doesn't know what he wants, but... He knows what he likes, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
he's super,
which is like women and killing.
Yeah, women and killing. And he drinking. Actually really enjoys killing, like,
yeah.
And so he fits perfect for this time. Yeah, it's interesting. So I guess I liked it. I like a lot of the stuff. I forgot how some of the stuff happens
mm-hmm.
This time around, because it's been a while since I've seen it. Maybe like over 5 years.
Me too, probably.
But overall, yeah, I did. It was still good. I can see obviously why I won a bunch of crap. There's powerful scenes. You obviously have to focus on certain characters or certain actors, because you can't just leave it blank for everybody. You know, you see some progression for even some of the what's it called? Some of the Jews
mm-hmm.
that are what's it called? You know, there's recurring characters. You like I said, but you have to do that to actually progress.
Yes, right. Yeah, like, ideally, right. If everyone's going to be a background character, then as they show these people's tales and stories, I mean, can you imagine if they changed out the ensemble cast every scene?
Oh my God, that'd be crazy,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's hard to keep up with.
Yes.
Yeah, but that's life. That's true. But yeah, overall, like the way it progresses, I think. You see it, and I like it. I like the progression of Oscar Schindler's. A little bit too much for me at the end,
mm-hmm.
And we'll get to that a little later.
The heartstring thing.
Yeah. A little bit too much for me at the end, but other than that, I still liked it. I still enjoyed the movie. I still, maybe for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like I said, it's hard to say you enjoy this movie, but
yeah, Luke.
I think this was like my second time watching this movie.
Okay,
I think I saw it. I think within the last 5 years too.
Hmm.
It's a pretty powerful movie, obviously.
Yeah, and for sure.
It's a hard watch.
Yeah, I mean, for a lot of people, especially back then. A lot of people went to this movie in droves to...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't know. It's like a weird fascination thing. I mean, we almost could get into the idea of watching this kind of movie en masse, the way people did in the 90s. 1993. When this movie came out. Similar to the Passion movie that Mel Gibson did. You know, churches and brought their kids over on buses to watch that movie, which is insane to me. But a lot of people did that. People have this thing about history, about something that was horrific but undeniably true, that people can't not watch, and it speaks to something of the human nature, which I don't think it speaks to a bad side of human nature. It's just weird, and weird to describe, you know. So I'll say that it's pretty great. And did you? Oh, I'm sorry. I think I cut you off. What were you going to say? Anything else on the impression?
No.
Powerful.
Right? Oh, definitely powerful. It pulls on the heartstrings a lot. So,
yeah. Too much? Would you say or no?
Oh, I mean, it has to. So,
okay. Well, you gave me a look there.
Does it have to?
You're not going to make like a fucking comedy out of the Holocaust.
I'm not asking you to make a comedy out of the Holocaust. I'm just asking you to...
It really wants to show you like the human impact, like the emotions of what, you know?
At the same time, though, it does have a... There's a structure to this movie. Everything is shown in the order it's meant to be shown for a good reason. They even have like a heist level of suspense at the end of the movie where the trains are rerouted.
Exactly.
Which I almost feel like has to be not real. I'm sure it happened. I'm not saying that didn't happen. Maybe it did happen, but it seems like such a movie plot thing to put that at the end where they think they're all saved.
Yeah.
For once, they have hope. And then the women's train gets diverted to Auschwitz or whatever.
See, I didn't take it that much. It did feel movie-ish, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, actually, I kind of thought, like, when is there a mistake going to happen finally? Because they've been kind of a safe haven so much at that point that, like, you're like, no one's gone untouched in a while. Like, this is fucking crazy. Like, this is, what are the odds? Even one of the persons who comes to try to get her parents in there, if they even know. Like, at that point, they're already saying, this is a haven. Everybody knows it.
Yes.
So when we get to the part where the train is rerouted, you're like, well, something was bound to happen.
Yeah,
you know, it was just a matter of time, and it happened. It just happened to be a very shitty time that it was this done, because you're losing half your workers or half the people.
Yeah.
So yeah, that. But I was wondering, like, when's the other shoe dropping? Basically,
I like so one thing that I did like about this movie is how it treats the German occupying people, the soldiers, the captains, and whatever, or even the citizens. There's some children in there, like German or non-Jews, I should say, right? Because they're German Jews too. I think Spielberg treats them very clinical. Like, besides Ralph Fiennes, who is the only German they focus on. I mean, Oskar Schindler, of course.
Yeah.
But like, right. But other than him, I mean, he treats it very clinical. Like, everyone is as brutal or as non-brutal as they are. Like, they're just there. They're not like, you think of a lot of movies where they do, you know, they do instill that horrific nature, or they add something in there. But they add a thirst for this.
But that's a good thing, right?
I think that's a good thing, yes. Okay. I did like that. Because the movie treats it as much as it treats the black and white setting, which is another question I was going to have for you guys. How would you guys feel about the black and white? What is the meaning of it for you? And obviously with the splashes of color, which is going to be important because it's bringing it up four times in the movie.
I think so.
Four times. The girl in the red dress, twice, so that's two times.
Twice, yeah.
The candle, and at the very end of the movie.
Well, that's kind of like...
Well, it's four times. Yeah. Yeah, I see your point.
He's like, that's kind of... You're right, it is. You're not wrong.
Anyway, so what do you think about that? I mean, that aesthetic, the choice to do it that way. Beautiful black and white, by the way.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Do you want to go first?
No, I guess okay. I can go since I'm already talking. I like it. I mean, for me, the black and white represents, it's almost like you're seeing this is a period and we're recalling to this. We're re-seeing to this. That's how I see a black and white thing almost. That's how black and white is, I view black and white. when you put something in black and white, is like you're showing me something that's happened before, right? And you're and we're going back to it just to show me. And the fact that it's black and white tells me that what's it called? I don't need to like even without the with lack of color, right? I don't need anything else to distract me from that.
Yes, that would have been one of my things.
So like that's a big thing. If you don't think about it. But when you add color, when you add all the extra additional stuff, you start focusing on other things.
Yes.
And
this, it gets drawn on the red.
Exactly. This makes you just focus on this.
Yes.
And you don't, this is a story we're trying to focus on. So it's a smart choice for that reason.
It forces the audience to pay attention.
It does. It does, really does.
Pay attention and just focus on the character work and the scene itself and the overall, I mean, there's no message over here, but like the overall fucked up already that's going on.
Right.
Another reason I had is that it displays that this period of the time is very dark, and it's supposed to mirror that, right, in a way. And the flashes of color are there for the importance of the scene. It's so important that it should be colored. Like the hope of the candle should be in, right, is there for that reason. The guy finally got to be a rabbi, right, in his own place, in his own community or whatever. And then the red dress is there to signify Oscar's, empathy. His empathy kicks in. Yeah, he starts developing a fucking soul, becomes human in a way. And at that point, you can tell instantly, he starts, going down that hole of saving Jews and stuff. That's clearly the thing that started him. And then it really got him over the edge when he saw the dead version of that red dress, It does all that. It's very impactful. The first time I saw it, I thought that was like definitely my favorite scene. Mine still might be my favorite scene. My favorite
Okay.
But mainly the little girl, because it gives you so much anxiety. It gave me so much today. I finished it today. Gave me so much anxiety watching a little girl walking and no one's paying attention to her, and she's going in and she goes underneath the bed there, and she's so cute. Like, of course, you picked the fucking cutest little actress. Right.
And then like it just sucks. It's like as soon as she gets under that bed, the coat turns to black and white.
Yes, it does. It does. I noticed. Yeah, I noticed that this time. I don't think I noticed the last time I saw it. That was also frightening because I know what was coming.
Right.
Of course. Yeah.
I think the hardest one for me was the one-armed guy.
Dude, yeah.
Oh, such a pain.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, and he's like, what use is there for him before he got killed? Like, he's plenty useful. He's very good worker.
Right.
He makes the case.
Yeah.
And then they bring it up to him. Like, he was a one-armed man. What was good he was? Like, come on, man. Be realistic. Like, we can only be bribed so much. Like.
Right, before it looks ridiculous, you just want to save people. It also, this movie's choice of black and white also, I think, for a fact, shows what something Luke has been saying for years now, is that people back then only saw black and white, right?
I'm going to hurt you.
The idea that the advent of movies without color and technicolor, and color didn't exist in the world.
So, what did you think about the black and white choice, Luke?
Yeah. Honestly, I have no real opinion of it. I just thought it was like the proper aesthetic for the movie.
I liked that when you said that to me the first time. That joke. That was great. I liked it a lot. So, this movie. I want to say that I think having... it's the details of language also is very good in this movie. Like the way everyone pronounces every name exactly how it's supposed to be pronounced. And everyone's accents is very carefully tailored. Liam Neeson's not from there. He's an Irishman. Things like that, right? And Ben Kissy, I don't know where Ben Kissy, but he could play any fucking race except for white. Yeah. Right. he can play any race. He convinces he pulls it off. Actually, he's played British before. Anyway. But everyone's so focused and detailed about the paper they used. The fucking the metal enamelware machines and the way they had to do them and the way people's names are pronounced is amazing. I just love watching the subtitles. Everyone reading the list off. I'm like, how are you pronouncing that right?
See, I was watching the subtitles and like the thing is like since I'm a native Polish speaker, there's a lot of stuff that was said in Polish and subtitled in Polish when I watched it on iTunes.
Yeah,
that I'm like, wow, it's like people don't get.
Oh yeah, a lot of German speak also
because it's just all in the background.
Yes, yeah, German speak too. Also shows the continuing involvement like of hope.
And so we saw it on Netflix, by the way.
Yeah, I saw it on Netflix. You saw it on iTunes, right?
Yeah. I thought it was my movie, so I bought it. So I'm not complaining.
No. Hey.
It's a good movie for the
And it was on Netflix the whole time. Anyway. I think I told Ralph, I think it's my movie. Either way, it's on Netflix. Okay. And another thing is that this movie, by showing all these horrors, especially the movie takes a big detour about halfway. this is after the business is going well and all that, and you know, Ben Kingsley's doing this thing, and he's rich, and this is before he, this is when Oscar is still a greedy asshole, ladies' man, right? And the movie diverts for like 20 minutes, maybe 30, maybe less, maybe felt more, right? Where they go into what's going on in the ghetto, and they're kicking everyone out, and they're killing people, and they take the first round of people, most of them, and they come back that night to kill the ones that are hiding. Well, all that happens, right?
Yeah, so that's a crazy scene.
That was a crazy detour.
Oh, yeah.
And at first, I was like, I noticed it this time as a detour. I mean, it is a legit detour. It's not part of any main plot. The little girl in the red dress could have been put there separately.
Yeah.
If they want to include, tie something into Oscar. And so I'm like, why did they include this? And like, it's to show the resilience of the Jewish people. It does more than just show the atrocities, but it just shows their cleverness, the ability to survive, the idea of surviving under any means necessary. And some of them do. And the ones that do are the ones that tell these stories. And it, I think it really tells like something more than just show you horrific shit. It isn't just there to be horrifying, is my point. And I really like that this time. I noticed it this time. I don't know if you guys agree with that, but that's what I got from watching it.
You know, watching it this time around, I remember the scene in the... what's it called? That Quentin Tarantino movie.
Inglourious Basterds?
Inglourious Basterds, where I'm horrible with names, but he says, you know, the Jews, they're really good at hiding.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They're clever.
They're like a rat because they're like really good at scavenging, exactly. And hiding and surviving.
Yeah. Right, that scene. And that reminded me of that scene, yeah, when they're hunting them at night.
Me too.
And you're like, they are fucking clever.
Yeah.
And you're like...
He's like a German.
Hey, you can complain all you want, but that's fucking survivability right there.
Yes.
Like,
but even the kids, like later on in the concentration camp.
Yeah, that's another really big scene. That pairs up with the scene that you're talking about.
Yes, it does.
So, because without that scene, you were just like, "What the hell do these kids get this shit from?" Yeah. You just had it. If you didn't have the scene that you're talking about,
yes.
Because the scene you're talking about is just shows everybody at night and them waiting like freaking. Using stethoscopes to see if people are, right. That's bonkers.
Yeah, yeah. No, and that, like, one of the simple, less creative hidings was really creative, where the guy, instead of under the bed, he is attached under the mattress of the bed, which is like, oh, that's a little extra step, you know, to make sure, but you still got caught. But,
right, yeah.
Yeah, that it's funny. There's a mirror between the children's hiding and the adults in the ghetto part, is that... remember when Danka and her mother, I remember Danka so well, the name, I don't know why, and the mother, they're reoccurring people, they try to get to one of the hiding floorboards when they're evacuating the ghetto, and the woman says, I can keep the girl here, but not you, I changed my mind, I can't have you in here, and she doesn't go in. The kids do the same thing to that other kid that goes into the latrine.
Right, and he's like, but the kid's like, his
plenty
expression,
of space.
The yeah. Kid's expression is like, how the hell am I going to get out now?
Right, yeah, I mean, and they're covered in shit, but there's plenty of space also. But yeah, it's a mirror to that. Also, a truck full of kids waving goodbye is horrifying.
Oh my fucking God. Like, as soon as, like, because they hear the kids' music, they're, yes, all happy.
But yeah, making them sing
as
their
the
way.
Mom,
it's Pied Piper bullshit. Like, it's fucked up. That was, like, insane.
That was.
And the mother's wails.
Gut wrenching, yeah.
The soldiers, like, can't stop. What one minute to do, I guess. That was awful. They didn't have to show anymore, of course.
No, they didn't.
There's a limit to Spielberg, after all.
But they did. It did look like, oh, bye, Mom, I'm going off to whatever.
To sing more.
I'm on a, you know, God, yeah. Going on a trip.
Yeah.
I'm on a truck. This is awesome.
And even the last thing when they take the woman that got diverted to Auschwitz accidentally by paperwork error.
I looked at that. That actually did happen. I looked it up.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Right.
Okay, good.
But they were in there for a couple weeks.
Oh. Yeah, maybe they do explain. Maybe they don't show. They make it seem like a day.
Yeah. No,
but I guess.
They make it seem like a day or two. Yeah.
But I guess they got to prep them. It takes a while. Anyway, on their way out, when they're walking back to the trains, you even see that one last little girl, like, walking in with the line.
Yeah.
Like, oh, goddamn. And you see the smoke. I'm like, come on. I mean, yes. Like, I think, like, that moment isn't necessary at all. But
is not necessary?
I don't know if it is necessary. I don't think it is necessary. It is an addition. It is something extra to make sure that you always are on track to what's going on here, the horrifying aspect.
That's the whole purpose of it, though,
right? I know, but like, it feels like it's trying to, like, is it like a hammer to the head on purpose? And why is it so? Like, why does the movie feel the need
beat
to
beat a dead horse?
Yeah.
No, I.
Or, according to PETA, feed a fed horse.
Thank you, feed a fed horse. Yes, sorry.
We're beating this horse. I, I don't see it that way, though. I see it as in, like, if you're going to do it, if you're going to show it, you have to show it. You can't just show a little bit of something right. and then not show it later because we know the implications of it. No. Like, that's not how it works.
Well, you see the line in the background. You see the children in the background, too.
Right.
Why focus in on one?
What do you mean by focus in on one?
They do. He does a close-up.
Yeah. But
right.
That's the thing because that's we're getting her point of view. We're getting her point. We're getting the – because yeah. she's looking at them, right? That's what it was?
One of the – yeah, I think – no, no, no. Maybe, yeah.
They were looking out and she yeah, was looking so, at yeah. that's what it was?
She was looking. Yeah.
So it's like you're getting a point of view of that thing. So like I didn't hate it. So it did feel it at the same time.
I'm not
but
saying
I also it's like a necessary evil to have it in there.
Yeah.
It does feel a little bit too much sometimes, but at the same time you're like you can't say that for the fact that it just happened. That's how it was. And
yeah.
I get the close up thing. Maybe you right. didn't have to emphasize it so much.
Maybe.
But that's another little thing to just harp on your strings.
Well, it is a Spielberg thing. That's what I'm saying. That's him saying something. Not just letting the material say it for him, kind of thing. You know, that's what I think. And let's talk about Goethe and Schindler because they have a lot of similarities on top of both being Jewish and they both work together and they're both men of stature. He's big in business, Schindler, and then he is big in, he's the commandant, right? The captain, whatever. They call him her commandant, right? That's what they call him. Goethe, Ralph Fiennes' character. Gath,
yeah.
Girl,
yeah.
I can't say his name.
G-Money.
G-Money. G-Slice. So,
who's calling them that?
G-Slice? We are now. He's G-Slice now.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
I think there's a lot of similarities to both of them. They both have a similar arc, except that he doesn't go through with it. Goethe. Ralph Fiennes. And,
well, he's also in a different position.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. Is
but he doesn't see it that way. That's the weird part about it.
Right. No, he doesn't see it that way. You know that scene when he tells Oscar, like, I noticed that you're never drunk. You have a lot of control. And, you know, starts talking about what is power. And this is where Oscar kind of tries to feed him that line that kind of works for like a week and then goes away again and then takes it back about power is not killing anyone indiscriminately as being able to say, no, I don't have to kill you if I don't want to. Right?
Right. To spare them.
To spare them. I pardon you. Right? He gets into that. You know, that whole thing, that whole subplot of Ralph Fiennes' character pardoning people, right, for not cleaning his bathtub
right.
or whatever. Like,
I'm very short lived, though.
He fucking acts and looks and acts like a college boy. Like, he doesn't know what he's doing ever.
Yeah.
Like, which prices a lot because he is the guy in command of this entire camp, which had other businesses too, not just Schindler. It's just Schindler was the most popular and the most money making. Yeah, it just seems like he's such a child.
Well, Schindler knew how to play the game, right?
So he hella knew.
Not only him, but like Ben Kingsley.
Well, no.
Well, Ben Kingsley played under him. I mean, like.
Ben Kingsley played the card, the listen, you keep me afloat and everything else, paper wise, you know, mm-hmm. and everything like that. And I just, Schindler knew how to, he was that lovable, charming person.
Right. It's like.
Because he bribed him.
Well, if anything.
Yes, but he knew how to play the game. He knew it right away.
Yeah.
I'm going to make connections with them right when they first started.
Right.
He built rapport with all of them at first.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, I have pictures of you guys. Remember this picture I took yeah. with you guys? Remember we had such a great time?
Yeah.
I have this great gift basket right here that you didn't. I don't even miss a beat on it.
Yeah.
Like, he's so good at that. That's.
Yeah, he's great. He's a social creature. And it's funny because the first half of the movie, when he's still not into saving people, Ben Kingsley has made his company a haven already. You know, by the time with the one-armed man thanking him and stuff, he is not saving people. That's not him being empathizing kind of guy. You know, it's Ben Kingsley who kind of like shoehorns in that thing in the beginning by making it a haven for Jewish people before he gave a shit about it. But you know, he took the reins from there and he actually made it possible because he had power. But it's funny because it takes the greed and the selfishness of Oscar Schindler to be able to have this opportunity. Because if it wasn't for his greed and his pettiness to make money at any means necessary through the labor force of slaves, then he wouldn't be in the position later on to give a shit about them and save 1,100 of them. He wouldn't have that position.
Right.
He can't just go off the gate starting to save people. It would never work.
It would never work.
It would never have worked.
No, you're right.
But yeah. And then there's that scene where he kisses the Jewish girl in front of everyone. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
What did you think about that scene? So what did we get that for? Why did we get that?
Oh, is that one of yours? Why did we get that? I think that one felt a little biopic-y. It felt a little biopic-y, but I'm not saying that that's why Spielberg decided to put that into the movie. I think it's like, everyone around them acted, some of them acted for sure like pissed off. Like, what the fuck are you doing? This is wrong, right? This is the worst species, whatever they say. But some of them looked uncomfortable, like uncomfortable in a way where they are met with, it's like they're being shown how much better of a person Schindler is than you.
But
otherwise, no, I don't
know. Why does Schindler do it?
I think he was just drunk and happy.
He was drunk.
He was drunk and happy, right?
Yeah.
He seemed that way to me. And he didn't know where he was.
Yeah.
And he didn't know the company that was being held.
No, he was, because everyone was having fun. It was his birthday.
Right.
Everyone was kissing him. Literally the scene.
So we didn't take anything else from that, right?
I don't think so, no.
Good. That's what I was going with. I just wanted to make sure no one else had the misconception, because I took it as in like, oh, he was just drunk and he fucked up.
Yeah.
Right? He fucked up in the moment, right?
Yeah.
Because that's how and then later on, Ralph Fiennes says, he's like, he was drunk. We were all drunk. We were all having fun, you know?
He's a beautiful girl.
He can't control himself.
He can't control himself, right? Like, that's a very true answer. But to play devil's advocate of myself, is you could also see it like he did it as a statement. I don't know if the movie's trying to say that. I think the movie, make a statement as in like, this is like, I care for them even if you don't, kind of thing.
I mean, I guess I can see someone saying that. I don't know. I just think.
Right. What I'm saying is, like, I didn't take that from it, but I can see, like, just to play devil's advocate, I can see someone saying that. And you could almost go both ways, but I did take it just as if he was just drunk and he didn't know that he forgot where it was. That's not appropriate.
Put it this way. He knows that there's a small, probably, prison sentence for a man like him.
Yeah.
Like he was sent to the soldiers' German barracks, right? The German jail version. And when the guy asked him, like, what did you do? I kissed a Jewish girl. Did your prick fall off? And they both start laughing.
Yeah.
Because that's the mythology they're spreading around, right? They're demons and they're whatever.
Yeah.
If he knew that. He knew he would be putting his company and his people at risk if he was going to go to jail. He wouldn't kiss them otherwise. Like, obviously, it was just a mistake.
Right.
No big deal. I mean, it was a big deal. But no big deal also.
Yeah. I also think he pushes the envelope a lot more than I remember him doing.
With the hoses?
With the hoses is a big one.
Yeah.
Because he even gets like, let's get extenders. Well, I love how he brings it up. It's a very cool line. Let me see if I remember it. He's paraphrasing because he says, he's like, why don't we, he's like, you know, it'd be a good idea to give them water, you know, to spray them down. And then he says, thank you. Like, we should do this. Thank you. Like, he's like basically saying, like, already asking, but saying thank you already. So he's like, you're going to say yes to me kind of thing. Like, without asking without asking permission. He does it in a way where, like, it's almost like, we're just chumming around and I'm just giving you the idea. Cool, man. Thanks for letting me do that.
Yeah.
And the guy's just like, well, I have no other choice because you already kind of forced my hand.
Right, and you know by the end of that scene, because in the beginning, for most of that scene when he's hosing people down.
I was very scared.
Because he was tipping his hat a lot, but at the same time, he wants to fucking, you know, not make these people suffer anymore. Then they have to. And they were having fun with it. Like, they were having fun. They were like
you're giving them too much hope.
Yeah, you're giving them hope.
Giving them hope, and it was cruel. But by the end of it, they're like sulking, because like, he's doing it to be good.
Yeah.
Like, they feel weird and uncomfortable.
And then I think that's why he went to prison, because that was, like, right after that. They're like, we got to charge him with something.
Yeah, was that right after that?
Okay. Yeah, that's why I felt like, what is he getting charged for?
Yeah.
You know? And I thought, I forgot what he got charged for. I forgot that it was a kiss.
Yeah.
But, yeah, after that, you see Goth with the superiors.
Yeah.
And you see, it's funny, because...
Why does Goth save him?
Huh?
Because he likes him? He likes the bribes, the money?
No, I think he likes him. Yeah. I think he generally likes Oscar.
I think he looks up to him.
I think he does look up to him. Yeah. I think he looks at him as a person who's like, I can aspire to be that guy. And that guy as it being somebody who has...
Because no one put him in that position. He put himself
exactly,
in that position.
Somebody who has control of his own destiny. As someone who has control of his own thing. And then it also is like, I have fun with that guy. It's a little bit
of
both.
He's a lot of fun.
It is.
I would hang out with him.
Right.
Minus the...
It is a mix of both things.
Yeah, for sure. I found something very weird is that when they're showing the end of the movie now, after they say everyone, the war is over, things like that, there's an intercut scene of I forget exactly what's happening, but it's right before they show the, you know, the rock in the cemetery thing. It's in the middle of it, they cut in Ghost being executed. I felt that that was a weird place to put it in.
I think it's closure.
No, no, it's closure. I understand the necessity to put that in. Like, what happened to Ghost, right? This fucking guy. This motherfucker. It happens after training, for sure. They get saved. They leave, right? But they have these scenes of, like, the Jewish people that are free, and they're standing, and they're sitting. They're having whatever. And then they just show his, and they go right back to the scenes again. In the middle of it.
Yeah, that is kind of weird, but hey.
It's a weird place to put it. I don't know if he just knew where to put it in, but he really wanted to.
Oh, he knew where to put it in.
I just think, yeah, it was a thing of closure. You get him the whole movie to not do anything with him at the end. Mm-hmm. Feels wrong. And I think you had to put, by the way, this guy got hung.
Yeah, by the way.
He did.
Yeah,
I think we needed that anyway.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. Also, that's rough.
But it's funny
to not even get it on the first try. You got to keep kicking it.
They found him in a sanitarium. So obviously, there's like.
What did they never say? How did. What's his name die?
Who?
Schindler?
No.
Old age?
They never say. Yeah, he was old. The only clue you get is that the tombstone says 1976 is when he died. So he was born in 1903.
Because he had to run away.
Yes. But he must have been. He must have been, like, through the tribunals. He must have been, like, relieved from any sentence because of what he did.
The Jews signed this whole thing, like, hey, this is.
But maybe he died in jail, for all I know. I don't know.
I want to read that letter.
Which one?
The one that all the, what's it called?
Oh, yeah, the petition.
All the workers.
The one they all signed. Yeah, that was cool.
I want to see what it says, because, like, how do you explain this? I know this is kind of weird that is, he didn't force us to write this thing for him.
Right. Like, you spent the first 5 pages explaining that this is really us. Yeah. We're doing it our volition. No hocus pocus bribery. And also, let's see, one more thing to get into here is the beginning of Schindler's story, like showing us the meaning of this man, right? For example, like we see a lot of bad things with him. And it starts off with Schindler, of course. We see how he treats his wife and how his wife.
Okay, that's a crazy scene. When his wife, the first time his wife comes in?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What a dick.
Dude. It was amazing.
What a fucking
you cut,
asshole.
Smash cut you on her on the train.
Right. Bye.
Bye.
The next scene, I was like, oh, shit. Yeah. And you know, at least he's honest.
But the thing is that the movie is explaining that that's Oscar at his worst. So if he only goes up from here, that's not bad. And then when we see Goethe at his worst, we see him in the beginning opening up with all that violence and sniping people in the morning to wake up his girl, probably not even for that reason. And his, you know, we talk about that Jewish maid that he liked, but didn't like. He can't even reciprocate that. It's so strange. Like the dialogue he had with her, but now her with him.
That was weird, man.
That was very weird. Like, that is the best of him, and that's still really bad. You know what I'm saying? Like, the move, that's his version of trying. Right, but failing miserably at it.
It's just like he doesn't know anything else.
No,
but he's not willing to change. So
right. What was weird for you about that scene in the cellar there with the maid when she's like basically naked?
What's weird about it is that he's trying to. It's like he's trying to be something he's not.
He's like a teenager trying to ask a girl out for the first time, and also a part not really that.
It's weird. Well, it's like he's trying to act like as if like I'm asking this person out, and I've never done anything wrong to this person in my life,
right?
And she's like, just don't hit me or kill me, please.
And she doesn't want to say anything because it'll be the wrong answer.
Exactly. So,
because she has that fear with Oscar, it tells her when we find out that. Oscar says, like, well, he loves you so much that he won't even put a star on you.
Right.
Anyway, and she tells him that he kills so arbitrarily for no reason. She describes this woman that he killed for no reason at all, and just because he wanted to. And that anything she could say, she could die. She feared for her life. And she accepted it and all this stuff. And match with that scene in the cellar is very strange. And I guess I don't know really 100% what to say about it other than, this man is clearly fucked up, and he is in charge of everyone. And I guess that's supposed to be the thing there. Anything you guys want to talk about? You want to talk about, like, I don't want to say your favorite scene, but your most powerful scene maybe or something like that? Anything like that at all you guys want to highlight or talk about?
There was a crazy scene where, like, you know, go through, like, walking by and, like, see some guys, like, oh, you've been here since 6 a.m. and you only have these many handles done. So take him out back to shoot him.
Yeah.
And both guns jam.
Every gun.
Crazy. And he's just like, my machine was recalibrated in the morning, so I was shoveling coal.
And
But they were still trying to shoot him.
Yeah. Because at that point, they were committed.
Right.
That, I think I read that was for sure that happened.
Dude.
True thing.
That is
that
like...
That guy was meant to live.
That guy was meant to live, yeah.
It's like a touched by God scene. That was like a miracle
thing. Well, if I'm
that
correct...
Was John Travolta describing a miracle to Julius.
That happens to be the Hebrew priest, isn't it?
Yes, it is the rabbi.
The rabbi.
Yeah. Yes. It is the rabbi that lights a candle at the end. Or towards the end. Yeah, that was a very... That was a good one.
Then you had like, you know, the Jewish engineer woman, she was like, you need to like redo this cement.
Yeah.
And the shooter, he's like, well, she's right, so do what she said.
Do what she said.
But, you know, she argued with you. Kill her.
Dude. Yeah.
That was the beginning of Goth, right?
Yeah, it was the beginning of Goth, yeah. That's when he's first in the war camp. Yeah. Some pretty powerful stuff in this movie. Powerful, good, and bad. Like that Jewish boy cop.
You know,
like, trying desperately to save that mother and daughter. And like, please, hi, please, please, and I'll take you to the good line and all stuff. If it wasn't for Amy, they would have been kind of...
Right.
Yeah. Pretty powerful movie. So this movie is... it's funny because this is one of those movies that it can stand any test of time. I think partly because of black and white. It could stand a lot of time.
It does. It does help out a lot.
The clinical period setting of this movie says a lot. I think also focusing on this one character and the people around him lets you have a story on top of being a historical war tragedy thing, right? So I think it's good. On the one really bad thing, the only bad thing about Schindler's List is that it summoned a lot of copycats. I think this opened even further. I mean, don't get me wrong. Since World War II ended, there's been a lot of movies before Schindler's List about World War II.
Of course.
There was a big flood in the 60s, 50s. A lot of them. But we've had a resurgence ever since Schindler's List. And now we've mellowed out now, but for all of 90s and all of the early aughts, tons of movies.
Pianist,
and most of them are awful. Pianist is great though.
Yeah, I know it is. Like, but what I'm saying is that I think that movie or Schindler's List brings, it's like you brought a lot of focus. Mm-hmm. The scope is big enough, but it's also it's also focused on one thing. It's weird, right?
Yeah.
Because you're still talking about the war in itself, but you're focused on this one event. And I think that's what Schindler's brought to for kind of started, brought back this whole thing.
Yeah, this
for World War II. Because now it's just like, now we're going to do specific stories about, you know.
Yeah, yeah. No, we saw a lot of those. And
you're right, we did.
Yeah. Very few have matched the level.
What did you think at the very end? Because I got to bring this up.
The Brock thing?
Huh?
The Rock thing?
No, the Rock thing's cool. I like that.
Yeah.
That was a cool thing. But I know you mentioned something about there was missing something in ours.
Oh,
how
so
did yours end? Was there any words or anything like that?
On the screen? While they were putting the rocks on the...
Were they showing people's names or anything like that?
They were showing the names of the actual people. It was like the actor that portrayed and the actual person.
See?
They didn't do it on the Netflix one.
The really? Netflix one didn't have it. And I told Roth, like, I remember growing up seeing that.
Like, this one girl, and like, they give her name, but you don't know who she is. Like, and then it sounds like, parentheses, the girl Schindler kissed at the party.
Yes.
And you're like, oh.
Yes, I told you. Yes. Netflix didn't include that?
Netflix didn't have that.
And that didn't look like a subtitle. That looked like it was embedded
in the movie. It's part of the movie. That's what
we thought it was part of the movie also.
Yes.
Yeah.
Was it white letters?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I remember it. Yeah, I remember the lettering
even.
It's been, yeah. So I'm not crazy.
No. Well, good. You are, but...
I mean, for
this
reasons.
Aspect.
Right. Okay, so that's cool. Also, what did you think about... See, was it too much for you?
What?
So we've been talking about this. You brought it up the last movie we had, right?
Empire of the Sun mainly.
Empire of the Sun, that's what you brought it up for Empire of the Sun, where he does his heartstring thing, right?
Oh, you're talking about the car.
He pulls too much. He asks too much. What I want to ask Luke real quick, because you already know my answer, Oscar. Luke, what did you think about that scene where he has to run away? Now, they've already called the war's over, you know, and everything. And then they gave him the ring, and then he's like, I could, and then he starts rattling off, I could have sold this.
Right.
Got 10 more people. What did you think of that scene?
Oh, it was pretty crazy. Like, at that point.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, it's just like, he's like, he realized, like, I could have still done more had I not been this person, you know?
But, I mean, did it make you,
did you
get you the feels?
Did it? Yes.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Okay. It did for me, a lot, and I couldn't help myself. It's, even today, when I finished it, or yesterday, whatever it was, this morning, I did get it a lot, and if because I was running through a lot of things in my head. One is like the embarrassment of not the situation, but the embarrassment like that I felt for him for him wasting all that money before, like he was complaining and that he was such an asshole and a petty person. He wasted so much of his life not saving people that he could have saved that much more. And then it was like, and then it became like, is he like a saving junkie? Like he almost went to that level. Like he needs to save someone because that's like his new thing to do, you know? Like he traded one huge part of his life and replaced it with this, you know? And in doing so, like he became addicted to it. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying that's even true. I'm not saying the movie saying that. I kind of felt that way. And but yeah, I felt all the feels because like I couldn't help it. The heartstrings worked on that scene so much for me. It's a strange reaction to the ring, right? And a strange reaction to the petition letters and everything. But you know, the hug at the end, that's what did it. When everyone came in to him. It worked.
See, that does it for me too. That does it, but I just felt like when he starts rambling off.
Yeah.
I don't know. I felt like it was, for me, it was a little, at this time around.
No, I get it.
I felt too much for me. Because the scene that gets me is when he starts rambling off the names. And because it's like, when he's like, I want to get this person, I want to get this person, I want to get this person. Mm-hmm. And you know, when he actually makes the list, when he actually gets all that thing going, and then he's like, struggling, he does everything to get in his power of like, no, it's gonna cost me this, it's gonna do like all that leads up to it.
Yeah.
All that does that for me already, and I don't need the additionals, I guess. Yeah. By this point.
Yeah, I see your point. No, I can definitely see that one way or the other, and obviously some of these Spielberg heartstring scenes are gonna work on us differently for each time, but obviously the more we watch his movies, the probably worser is gonna be. We'll see how it goes. So that is that's our review of Schindler's List.
Yeah.
Which, streaming on Netflix, apparently. So there you go.
Right.
Watch it
also
there.
Also on purchase for, on iTunes.
You can purchase it like right Luke there. Did on iTunes. Yeah. Especially if you want to see those captions that we missed out on because right. It's not on Netflix for some reason.
Good job, Netflix.
So, that is it for our show. You have been listening to Another Movie Podcast. Don't forget to send us feedback on this episode or any episode we do or review or whatever over at, podmoviecast@gmail.com. And don't forget our website, which is otherpodcast.com for all shows we have and done, we'll ever do. You can follow me personally on Letterboxd and Twitter for my movie watching habits at Armin Filmmaker, which is filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. Ralph?
You could follow me at Gamer Ralph. That is with two R's and an F.
Lukey Poo?
At Slothmaster Luke.
Yeah. All right. Remember, we are a bi-weekly show. So next time, we're not doing our regular show. This is our last regular show of the year. We're going to come back and we're going to start working on top 10 stuff. What to be expecting is very simple. We're going to do three top 10 shows, one for TV, one for discoveries, find out what that's about, and obviously for the movies for the year. That's going to be in January right away. But the last show for this month is going to be we're just going to have a chat discussing some of the movies we've been catching up on for the end of the year stuff and for our top 10 potentials. And talk about some of the stuff we've been watching and some of the stuff we wish we made it through and how did the year fare so far in terms of like box office, anything. Any questions we can come up with. How did the year feel in movies, basically? We're going to have just a discussion.
Okay.
Nothing, no review, no special thing. So that will be released before the end of the year, probably right after Christmas. So expect that then. Don't forget the bonus thing. Other than that, I am Oscar and I'll see you next time. And you're?
Ralph.
And?
Luke.
Cool. Later.
Look, everything in this world is running exactly on schedule. Besides, to leave, we probably have to wait until the movie's over or something.
Well, when is that going to happen?
Do you? Do you?
Yes.
Come here.
Yes, sir. All right. Quiet on the set.
We were all making fun. We're like, maybe Clinton will pass away too and we'll get another holiday before the year ends. And we're like, what about Carter? Carter's still alive, right? Maybe he'll pass.
Oh, he's still kicking?
Yeah. He's like 93 or something.
Yeah.
Close to
94.
Yeah.
Yeah, the rest are... Yeah. Wow. Dude. Okay. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Quack, quack, quack.
the fuck was that?
Let me know. Tutelage.
Adrian.
Oh, really? Again? Didn't they put that in the first one?
I think so.
Dude, check the first Creed. I'm pretty sure they put tutelage in the they're just recycling shit. They suck.
Wait, what?
In the synopsis for IMDb, I think for the first Creed, they use the same $5 word.
Which is?
Tutelage.
Tutelage?
Yeah, like it's Pai Mei and shit.
Stop making
that. I don't see anything.
Pai Mei from Kill Bill or something? Come on. What? No? I thought, I could have sworn. I remember hearing that a lot of Creed. I don't know.
No, they say it in the movie a lot, I think.
I don't know about that. I don't know. Maybe IMDb retroactively went back and changed the synopsis.
They could have been.
Dude, when that song comes out, tell me you guys didn't feel something awesome in that ring.
How do you not?
Right. It's a good moment. They put it. Okay. All right. Settle down. All right. You ready? 5, 4, 3, 2.
Under the tutelage of Rocky Balboa.
So you can't do that to me.
Sorry. All right. You ready?
Yes.